Welcome, everybody. Good evening. The June 13th, 2016 regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Elger, since this is your last meeting, will you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
He's not coming in, right?
No.
All right. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante? Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mrs. Clark? Mr. Buckle?
Here.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Mr. Escalante informed the board he couldn't be here tonight and he cannot call in, so he will not be with us this evening. Superintendent report.
Just got a couple of brief updates. First one, board members, at your desk, you have an envelope that is the master board member information. It's your activities that you've completed to date. Hey, again, it just really goes in line with our culture of continuous learning. So I appreciate all the work board members have done. So that's there for each of you. Community updates, special education collaborative parent group meeting will be June 20th, 7 p.m. at Hadley, and June 15th, Wednesday, we'll have a facilities meeting, again, 7 p.m. at Hadley. So just reminding everybody of those two upcoming important meetings. We're very fortunate and very grateful for a Rotary donation of $750. We're putting this year's donation towards the Spanish summer camp. Really appreciate the Rotary. Kurt is a member, has been a longstanding member of Rotary. Just really appreciate their continuous support for our school district and others.
That's great. Thank you very much.
So that was it.
Okay. Board reports. Any board reports?
I had one.
Sure.
It was at, I can't remember, I think it was, I don't remember what board member, it's at the Forest Glen BPA.
Yeah.
And it was their last meeting, so it was after school, and it lasted about
cool.
7 minutes.
You'll take that one every time?
Like, but he gets full credit for standing in for
that. Yeah. So,
I thought you were going to say 6 minutes.
And I just reported on the facilities task force.
Great.
Some of that information, and that was about it.
Right. So. Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for doing that for Joe. And just really quickly, I want to thank all board members for being this year, in particular, really good about rotating and, through Nancy or with each other, letting us know to be able to get to those PTA meetings especially. It's just an important touch point, so thanks for doing that and for all of us for doing that. I posted a report this afternoon. I was at a LEN meeting this morning, which was the last monthly meeting for 2015-2016. And just a quick update for the board. You have the report, but for the community as well. And this will be posted with our minutes of the meeting. There are three education funding reform bills that are still on the table. One is Senator Menard's SB 231. The second one actually is a new one from Senator Lyford and Representative Willie Davis co-sponsors, which is an evidence-based funding formula that we talked a little bit about that they're co-sponsoring from Vision 2020, which is an ISB initiative. There will be a meeting next week of Senate and House Republicans and Democrats to sit down and look at that as a future funding reform possibility. Another bill that passed the Senate but failed in the House was a bill by Senate President Cullerton and Senator Trotter, which was a standalone bill in response to Governor Rauner's request for just a standalone K-12 education bill by June 30th, but that failed out of the House. Governor Rauner did call for a K-12 budget work group that, as we speak, is going on in these last couple of weeks of the budget year to negotiate a K-12 budget by the June 30th deadline. The expectation is they will hammer something out, and the focus is on just a K-12 budget at this point, no funding reform discussion. And There'll be some response by DuPage County Partners in Lend, along with other ed groups as well, if in fact there is not a K-12 budget, and that would be impact statements from local district leaders. So I just wanted to update everybody that those things are happening, and I want to pass out to the board the Lend Council meetings for this coming year. So you can have these as well. And again, any board member is welcome to come.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't even, yeah. Did you give one to Patrick? Hi, Stephanie, welcome.
We will give one to Patrick.
Welcome. Okay. Great. And that's it. Any other board reports? Stephanie, we were just doing board reports. I don't know if you had anything.
I don't have.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. Okay. On to public participation. Reminder again for members who wish to address the board. To simply sign in. Mrs. Mope has already grabbed that, or will grab that, and the sign-in sheet in the back of the room, and she will call your name in order as listed. I want to remind members of the audience, as we always do, that speakers should identify themselves. If you can, come to the podium over here to be heard. Actually, Mike, would you mind just moving the podium a little bit, kind of turning it? Thank you. And limit comments, if you can, to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we'd ask that you forego making them and provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. And again, we always appreciate anything written, regardless of time and comment. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. We ask for your consideration of this as well in your remarks. Profanity, interruption, and or interference with the orderly conduct of this business meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response, as a response is warranted, and if the member of the public provides the appropriate contact information, since, again, this is just a sign-in sheet. And just a reminder, we're live streaming the meeting, so if you can speak up so that our mics can pick you up. I think we're doing pretty well with that, typically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, for them. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Stephanie. Mrs. Moak.
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper, good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Do you have a signature?
Good evening. This brainstorm report, the one that the Facilities Committee never saw or even heard existed in our 9 months. Isn't it interesting that it cost us $9,960, $40 below board approval? So the board wasn't aware of this report. Your director of buildings and grounds wasn't aware of this report. The principal of this school, Hadley, the only focus of this report, he wasn't aware of this report. How well do you think that this $9,960 was spent when the report was never used by your facilities committee or even discussed by the board? I'd say that the three payments was a good trick to try to slide by the prying eyes of district watchdogs. I can assure you that I will be even more vigilant going forward. I will not let this happen on my watch again. Thank you.
Thank you.
So to that point, inaccurate statement, the board, the previous board, directed me to do the brain spaces. We reached out. We connected with them. We had that. Steve Dively was connected with, I'm forgetting her name right off the top of my head, but the lead individual from Brain Spaces, mm-hmm. spent time with her. But it was at the direction of the board that that we do that. So.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
Could I have a follow-up question?
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Is there a reason that it wasn't included originally in the...
As I said... a board meeting
last
ago
meeting, yeah.
That I owned it, that I'm not sure why it didn't. It was in our library. It just didn't get scanned in. It was not an intent to hide or do anything. So I spoke to that one meeting ago, two meetings ago.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay, but it was at the direction of the board. It was the previous board that gave me direction to them. So,
was talked about at a board meeting.
It was not. We transitioned to a new board. We moved on for other pieces. So, no.
Do you know why that, anybody that was on the board, why you guys ordered it?
The idea was that the original Brain Spaces, just for clarity, was done in 2007-2008, and Brain Spaces is the name of the architectural firm whose sole, architect focus are schools. And it's not only an architectural kind of design forum, but they also focus on space utilization. So when the original report was done in 07-08, it was at a time when we had the Master Facility Committee starting. And so it was a part of the original set of documents that were created. The report, as people have seen, is about this thick, the original report. And so they broke it down by each of the schools, and then also an overlay of by each school utilization need, at what percent are you at full capacity, et cetera. So that was originally done for the Facilities Task Force, Master Facility Planning Committee, that the previous board sat on, or board members sat on. And then when the board, last year or the year before, actually.
It was the previous board, right before. It was in that April.
Right, we were talking about then having the community turn over to a task force community. Mm-hmm. That one of the things we talked about was I brought that back. I think, Joe, I had given you my copy to look at and we discussed an update because there had been changes in some of our programming, dual language, et cetera, and what did that mean in terms of space. And so the focus of this was Hadley.
Correct.
In terms of the update, in part because of the portables and that a solution had been moved forward on the elementaries in terms of the portables. So Paul brought back the
individual from Brain Spaces.
Yeah. And I'm even thinking just the amount that it was. And then we said move forward because that'll be good data. The board saw it, and we mm-hmm. have it. I know it's been posted since then. Certainly, it's important information. I read through it juxtaposed against the Hadley data from the original report, and it is a good update. But I don't know that it's wholly different than some of the original material. But it's a good update to have just in based on where we are with portables, et cetera. And I know that Kurt raised that question in a meeting, and we said, I think we were all, myself included, I know it's on there, but it was the original mm-hmm. report. So it was raised, and it was a miss that it was not included.
Right.
But that was the intention behind it originally, and then the update.
Because I guess that's what I was trying to figure out, and I can see why it could be missed, but we spent $99.60, but have we done anything with it? I mean, we spent $10.
Really have not done, other than the facility.
Have we given it to Green or anybody? Or?
They
have it now.
It's going to them.
Yeah, they have it now.
Yeah, that got moved forward to the new architects, Green Associates. And, and it's public domain now, too. It was put out as soon as it was realized that it was missed. And it was, this was a document in a whole, as I looked, because I followed up, too, and said, show me all the documents. And the board, actually, for our meeting on Wednesday, has that whole listserv of documents. So, but it's in the right place now in terms of people taking a look at it. So,
I think
good questions.
It's confusing too because, with this Vegas facility is, and all the discussions we've had, for this to basically the board to give direction outside of a board meeting, if no one even knew that it was being done.
You mean direction on the update?
To do the update.
No, it was at a
no,
board
it was
meeting.
At a board meeting.
It was at a board
it
meeting.
Was at
right.
a
and to get it, and get an estimate, yeah.
We sent it to the board, and then we never had the conversation about it.
Right.
So we moved into the facilities, moved it into the task force. That was that next direction, that task force.
Right.
And
the intention
back,
was for
really
it to
no
be used.
Other conversation. Okay. But again, I own. It did not get uploaded. It is not there. 100% own that.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'm okay with that. It's always curious. I mean, we spent $10,000. Board members, it sounds like it came from the previous board. And why? I mean, nobody asked about it. Nobody's actually followed up on it and said, where's this space utilization study? It sounds like Erica looked at it, but the rest of the board, I mean, where was, if we're going to spend that money, it almost seems like we spent $10,000 and we shelved it somewhere, and if somebody hadn't discovered that we had this out there, it'd still be on a shelf somewhere. But, and I'm not blaming the superintendent for that. If the board actually ordered that, why did you order that? And what was the purpose
it was
for
in
using it?
Why to order it is we used the other ones that were provided. When we first got on the board, you know, we got all these packets that still out in the home of all the previous plans and what was included in
right.
the space utilization study that was done in 2008. And I know for myself, I utilized it because I look at those all the time. And I was one that brought it up and said, we need to get these updated. I said it the first meeting.
The brain spaces, yeah.
The first meeting I was at, because we were looking at older data at that time. Because this is 2014, we were looking at 208 data. And I did my own site tours to see how valid they still were. And, you know, somewhat still valid, but it's not 100%. But there was a cost to do it at that time. We moved forward, and then we talked about updating them post-construction. So your point, so that's the why.
Yeah.
Your point, why didn't we all remember and bring it up and say, that's a valid point. I mean, to me, I thought...
I don't even know, so did we even... Because if you got it when you came on the board, did we get that new one? I don't think we ever got
the 208.
Yeah, but when Steph and I came on the board, we didn't even know about it.
The 208.
And we said...
The updated one would have been there.
When was it completed? What was the date?
April. So it was delivered to the
15.
Prior board, because the new board was set in the first week or second.
Well, and if I
second
can add,
meeting in May.
Right, and just one other piece of context, and that is, you know, when the other board turned to Paul and said, what out of this do we need to be updated in terms of the brain spaces, the focus had been was on the elementaries in terms of a decision made around the portables. And so the piece that was the outlier, which is, again, the focus, it was the focus for the task force too, was Hadley. And so if there was space utilization, and actually in Hadley, when you put the two reports together, the update shows the validation of the original report, which is, I mean, space hasn't changed at all. You know, the special education rooms had already been on there when they did that, you know, as we looked at it. So all that information was pulled forward. But part of the discussion from that board, too, was already talking about needing to have community input on this stuff. So I think it was, for me at least, it was the ability to look at the two pieces, but also it was a little reminder that this is information that we really need for Hadley. So that's why just that piece was done. Yeah. Thanks. Good question. Thanks. Mrs. Moak, next.
Kristen Kramer.
Hello, Mrs. Kramer.
Hello. How are you?
19. Good.
I can read my little font on my phone. My name is Kristen Kramer, and I'm a parent in the District 41 community. Kind of outgoing, kind of sad moment. As my son just graduated from East Green. But I want to take a moment to recognize a member of the District 41 administration who often recognizes the work of others. I first met this individual one weeknight evening in May of 2005. My son Nathan, who is now a junior in high school, and I were attending the kindergarten open house at Lincoln School. It was the first time I had been at Lincoln in many years, and I remember being in the kindergarten classroom and speaking with a very sweet, kind, and thoughtful woman who at the time was the principal of Abraham Lincoln. She made a lasting impression from that moment on, and although Nathan did not end up attending Lincoln School until 2 years later, I was looking forward to again seeing the woman I remember from the open house. That woman was Lori Campbell. Unfortunately, she was no longer the principal 2 years later. I did reconnect with her in time, as she had only moved from Lincoln to the district offices, where she had become the director of human resources. Our paths have crossed many times over the course of the past 8 years, and I can remember her attending the fifth grade tea at Lincoln in 2013, where I was excited to share the news with her that Lincoln PTA would be receiving an environmental concerns award from the Illinois PTA. She had been quite instrumental at the time with assisting us with the Lincoln Ambassador Super Plan project, which achieved Lincoln PTA this award. She was also excited to share with me the news that day that I had been selected as a recipient of the Those Who Excel Award from the district. During my years at District 41, Lori has always supported the work of the PTA. She has been responsive, fair, professional to any requests I've ever made, and always has a smile and a laugh that can light up a meeting. On behalf of the DuPage West region, I would like to present you with an Illinois Thanks Award to honor and award kindness and service to the District 41 PTA. I feel fortunate to have worked with you over the past years at District 41, and I wish you the best of luck in your new venture in Oak Park.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lori.
That's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. All right. Presentations, reports, initiatives.
All right. Tonight we have a presentation from our PTAC, our Parent Teacher Advisory, and our Culture of Care, the annual update. So looks like we've got a number of people making their way to the front. I'm not sure who wants to kick it off. Jeff, Jill, Patty?
Jill.
Yeah. Jill's going to be the MC for right now?
Yeah.
All right, so we're excited about the presentation.
Jeff and I spent the last 10 minutes making a joke to start with, and we came up with nothing.
You can tell it's still setting, actually.
So we're going to spend a little bit of time tonight talking to you, giving you an update from our recommendations from last year, talking about our work from the spring and some changes in the law that are going to lead to later your conversation about policy recommendations. Who are we, in case you're wondering? These are all our participants that were on our committee this year. We have Jeff Burke, who's here tonight, Patty Jerzak, who is a teacher that may have been bullied to attend.
Yeah.
Kelly Carter, who may also from Hadley. Both the teachers are from Hadley, that's shocking. Who's attending, Colleen Costello, who represented one of our parents on the committee, and then Michelle Gallagher. And I'm Joanne Ryan, for those that don't.
So the requirements of PTAC. We started meeting at the end of last year knowing that we had quite a charge ahead of us this year. So the board policy, as you can see, requires us to have a PTAC to help in the development of our discipline policy and procedures, and they have listed some examples of some of the items we talked about. The committee meets annually to revisit the discipline policy, and we met quite a bit this year. We had quite a few meetings, quite a charge to do, especially with the new Senate Bill 100 and how that would affect our district and our behavior matrix, and I'll get into that in a second. So reminders and updates from last year. When we spoke to you last year, we came with an idea for an anti-bullying curriculum. We came together. We had some different feedback on it. We talked at our meeting. We used the anti-bullying curriculum as a cool tool in the elementary level, and there were five or six lessons that we touched upon, talking about what to do if you were to witness some type of bullying, cyberbullying, gossiping, things such as that. And what we did with our PBIS committee for the elementary is we kind of went with each lesson that they suggested but kind of tailored it to the grade level, because you couldn't expect a kindergartner to do the same thing as a fifth grader, although we see that quite a bit. Fifth graders acting like kindergartners sometimes. But that's what we did. And some of the feedback we got, was interesting. We decided on the elementary level that we would have an exit slip at the end of each unit so we could talk about what went different, what we could do next time. Mm-hmm. And they were mostly favorable. It was really cool to see the kids had such good insight and reflection on that lesson. I think maybe the middle school is a little bit different with the feedback.
Yeah, we did a week-long bullying kind of thing where each department took a day and in their classroom took some time to teach a part of the curriculum. So we talked about, what can you do if you're a bystander, what is the stop phrase, that sort of stuff. And then at the end, it ended with our science department taking on the last day of the curriculum. And at least on our team, she had the kids write about a time that they had either been bullied or witnessed bullying. And so we as a team, so that would be the 8A team, we went through those written pieces And we saw some red flags where we went back to, you know, either our school counselors or our social workers or teachers who were close to some of those other students to talk to them about what they had written. For the most part, there weren't too many red flags. There were maybe two or three, but it was a good thing that we were able to go back and say, this is probably something we should bring to somebody so that it can be brought up as something to talk to this kid about. So that was the positive there.
And so then part of our charge as well is our PBIS committees at the school level, talking about the Tier 1 committee, strengthening them at the school level, increasing membership, and exploring the establishment of a district-level PBIS committee. And I know one of the things we talked about at Franklin is looking at the student behavior report that we use for discipline at our school, and we talked about that as a committee as well. And then also exploring at Franklin, do we want to kind of make our committee a little bit larger to talk about taking those anti-bullying curriculum and those lessons and kind of arranging them again every year to keep them fresh, because it is the kids do know what's going on in the classes as they get up, and they know this is what they did last year, so we want to keep them fresh, and also kind of keep them fresh is probably the best thing to say. Okay. So that leads to SB 100 overview, which is a public act. You can read a little bit here. It becomes effective this September. SB 100 makes changes to out-of-school suspension and expulsion procedures and imposes new requirements in those cases where a school suspension or removal will be allowed. This was started by a student group in the city of Chicago called VOICE, Voices of Youth in Chicago Education. They created this bill to address what they thought an impact of out-of-school suspensions and expulsions had on their peers in their school. They felt that the practices and discipline were pushing the students out of school and into the juvenile and criminal justice systems. The youth leaders of VOICE were prompted to push for common sense school discipline after learning that the out-of-school suspensions and expulsions are being used frequently in Illinois public schools. And then extensive research on their they found shows that harsh discipline approaches are particularly harmful to students of color and do not promote school safety or academic achievement. So what we'll be talking about a little bit, if you were to look it up, to talk about the stages of SB 100, limiting the amount of out-of-school suspensions, having a program in place for reentry back to school, as well as doing our best to keep repeat acts from happening with repeat offenders.
So the Senate Bill 100 is what pretty much drove our work this year. So we took a look at the board policies having to do directly with student discipline, and we reviewed kind of some of the recommendations that were made already on there, and then we made some of our own recommendations. We sent those on to, I believe, the policy committee. And then we created a behavior continuum what Senate Bill 100 does is it makes you look at each child as an individual rather than looking at, okay, all kids who do this is this. So we've created this continuum so that if you look from the left to the right, you're looking at the least severe to the most severe types of behaviors. And we thought that would be easier for parents to look at rather than trying to read through a policy. This continuum makes it very easy for parents within the community to see, okay, so this is what we're looking at in terms of discipline.
And the idea with the continuum is to be part of the handbook.
Right.
Because the parent perspective was that if my kid's in trouble, I might not know which board policy to go to, or I might not think to go to board policy, but I automatically am going to grab that handbook and kind of want to see where do those behaviors fall. So from the parent perspective, they really felt that that continuum was an important piece that they needed in the event, and I'm sure it would never happen to any of them, that their child or children would be in trouble at school.
So that took up most of our time that we were meeting, but we did also talk about, we reflected on how did the anti-bullying curriculum this year go. So we looked at it from the elementary perspective and then again from the junior high perspective. And overall, junior high, it went well. As I talked about earlier, the only thing I would suggest is we come up with a different catchphrase for junior high kids. So
the junior high kids were like waiting for the catchphrase and like, it's stop.
Literally, I had kids come and go, really, Mrs. Jerzak, that's
right. They couldn't think of something better.
So we're working on it for next year.
All right, so this fits really well right into the work of PBIS and having positive behavior interventions within our school. So the work of the district PBIS committee, we will continue to revise the student behavior report, which is basically the referral form that a teacher would write if there is an infraction, and they would submit that to the district office or to the building office. So we have been in the process of trying to reduce redundancy if it might say disobedience and noncompliance. Maybe those are synonyms, so we should probably combine them. And having it relate to what we have to report to the state anyways and to the federal government for discipline. We are also looking at, we have revised the suspension letters. So those will have, and if this goes right into Senate Bill 100, so that there is a separate letter if you are suspended for 0 to 3 days, for 4 days, for 5 to 10 days, and then for an expulsion. And the letter really follows the letter of the law to make sure that we're communicating clearly to parents the reason for the suspension, communicating that we have exhausted interventions within the school, which would be our PBIS interventions. So that is for professional development. We need to strengthen our Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions so that we are truly supporting our students so that they can remain at school and that they can be supported and do well so that we're not having to have repeat offenders or students that are suspended from school. And like Jeff said, the process for a re-engagement plan, and as well as supportive services for students who might be suspended for, we don't have this very frequently, but if we did have a serious infraction where a student needs to be suspended for 5, 6, 7, 8 days, then we need to have a supportive services that we can provide to those students so that we're consistent with those. That's the work of the PBIS committee for next school year. Kind of wraps it up.
Okay. Board, question?
I'm just curious about when you look at the statistics for our elementaries and then for Hadley in terms of the students who are in distress, I guess I would put it, you know, where you see this repetition behavior. I know that through PBIS, a lot of the behavioral contracting, engagement with parents has done a lot of, in the past, has done a lot of work to really focus on this is a bigger issue than just you won't sit still in class. So what have you seen in terms of some of the statistics?
So we looked at themes the previous year. We didn't do much of that data review this year because we had so much work with the policies and kind of felt like now the policies are changing and working off of data that doesn't necessarily lead into our vision. It seemed a little bit more disjointed for the group. So we spent a lot of our time this year working on policy to continue putting all those pieces together. Data review over the past, like, several committees that Jeff and I think are continually on. You know, themes that we would see at the elementary all tend to kind of be those same three. I can't remember off the top of my head what
we like to, when we run our behavior information, we go by the big five, and they talk about the type of offenses, the location of offenses, gender, the time, so we looked at that. And one thing that we noticed in the elementary level is
physical, right?
Yeah, physical, right. When we looked at our student-based reports, our student behavior reports, we noticed that you referenced sometimes they have the same thing on their two or three sides. Or, for example, like there's if you could check the bullying category, well, teachers, instead of checking this is bullying, they would check like the specific behavior which might be bullying. So we might see something like teasing or aggression, whereas, you know, it makes our bullying numbers look low, but those numbers look high. What we want to work on as a district is really making sure that we're as specific as possible and we're using the same language across all five schools. So when we look at that data, we have comparable, we can say, okay, this was very clear on what was being reported here. We weren't kind of wondering, well, do you think this is related to this topic, or did they really need to report it this way? But I think that's one of the things we're going to look at with our PBIS committee in the fall.
Right, and if the elementary tend to be more physical, the junior high tends to turn into more verbal. Mm-hmm. Right, so they're expressing themselves one way, and then they kind of come to us, and their language evolves.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, a theme that we've noticed across the years, and we kind of identify the types of behaviors we're seeing. Do we typically have different categories of students that are struggling more than others? Definitely. I think that's where at Hadley we kind of rolled out our mental health committee with a focus on weekly meetings with the administrators, social workers, psychologists, counselors, school nurse, to identify students that are really struggling and what kind of wraparound services can we put with those students. We've also implemented Alyssa's mission this past year, which was a huge success for kids that were feeling like they were being bullied or targeting, and that it was kind of they were starting to demonstrate more self-harm behaviors.
Can you talk about that?
The Alyssa's mission?
Yeah.
Sure. So that we rolled out in October. Mm-hmm. It was for 8th graders only. It actually fits in line with board policy about a suicide awareness program.
Right.
So we had a representative from Alyssa's mission who worked really closely with that mental health committee. I don't have the statistics. I didn't realize you were going to ask that question.
No, I just for public context.
Sure. So
so
sure.
people know.
So they come in and the students complete a pretest. They go through, will you describe a little bit more? Because you were actually in
the okay. So there's a series of videos that they watch with mm-hmm. various scenarios, and then there's some time to break apart and talk. And then there's a pretest, and then after all of that curriculum is done, there's a post-test. Mm-hmm. And both of those things we turned into the administration and the mental health committee.
Then it comes to us, we scored right. them. From there, we identified several students that were demonstrating behaviors that were concerning. Mm-hmm. So then there was follow-up with the social workers and psychologists, and then follow-up involving the parent. So just kind of trying to make it more mental health supported services for our age.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing that, because I think sometimes the piece that I wanted to reinforce is that I think there's a lot of work that's proactive, but it doesn't get contextualized. It isn't put out in
yeah,
public,
you know, we celebrate
which is
that,
so important.
Right, we celebrate that in the building with our staff.
Right.
We really celebrate it with our mental health committee, but you're right. We don't kind of put out those statistics.
Right. I think the community should be proud that we have that, like you said, wraparound services. You know, that model in place, because it's really important.
And there were teachers as part of that curriculum who could put a sticker up in their room that they could be a contact person if somebody
right.
was feeling like...
It's a
like
safe space.
Safe,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. So,
thank you.
Well, first, thank you for doing this. Since I've been on the board, I've always been impressed with the seriousness that the teachers, administration, staff always... use in this category, you know, and I know that you're never going to be able to probably eliminate it all, but it seems to be getting better all the time. The other thing I'm glad you pointed out about SB 100 is that it's a law-driven, you know, from the state level, and part of the reason, I don't want people to think it's to make it more lenient. The idea was it made no sense to take kids and throw them out of school to where they got into more trouble and almost reward them. If you can do enough bad things, you can get thrown out of school and not have to come anymore. And instead, it's this concept of how can we work with those students to try to, you know, reintroduce them to the school in a way that they won't be disruptive.
And
I think that's really important.
And I think as a happy note that the committee kind of noticed, we kind of felt like we're already there. Like, it didn't seem so disconnected from the work that we're doing. Because I think we do, sure, the consequence is the reactive part, but what's more the proactive piece? Like, what are we going to do to help this child move forward, be successful? Mm-hmm. You know, we're not here to shame you.
Right.
Like, you're making a mistake, like, we're going to help you work through that and be better by the end of it. So it was kind of nice when we were reading through language, like, wow, this didn't feel so different from how we
from
live.
What we're doing today.
And I know at the elementary level, like, we did this at Lincoln, and we do it at Franklin. Lincoln had AIDS away, and then Franklin has Ben C's, be safe, responsible, and respectful. And what we do is look at those instances, like, where is the highest rate of these disturbances happening? And so at the start of each school year, and sometimes in the middle, we have expectation stations rotate through the school. I've been very lucky to do the boys' bathroom the last couple of years. I'm hoping this year with my new position, I make it outside to the playground. I'm not sure. But we have teacher station, and the kids rotate throughout the day. We talk about, you know, what your behavior looks like here. And my favorite part of last year is we were standing out in the front showing the new kindergartners, you know, what it's like to be at the bus lane or at the carpool lane. And one of the little kindergartners said, what if my mom doesn't show up? And another kindergartner yelled, you just get out of the bus, they'll take you home. And I'm like, the last thing we need is a kindergartner jumping on a random bus. That's a whole other issue. But we definitely use that data just for those expectation stations to talk about what it's like to be safe, responsible, and respectful at each of the staffs around the building.
Thank you.
Board members, other questions?
I have a couple other questions. One thing I was wondering for bullying, obviously, it sounds like the behavior reports, that would be something you could use to, like, monitor. Mm-hmm. A question about those. Are those something you keep electronically, where you can, like...
Yeah. Cindy answers them. Like, I know at our school, when you fill them out, you hand them into the data clerk or, like, the school secretary, and then they enter the data, and we access it through Skyward.
So you could, like, run the four.
Yeah, it actually runs really nice graphs from those big five.
Yeah.
And then you can also run it by student. So what we'll try to do too is like run it, and it might happen that you might see that, you know, a student's had kind of four SBRs, we call them SBRs, submitted. So it is like, oh, let's talk about that student a little bit more, what's going on, you know, because clearly having different teachers throughout the day, sometimes that could get missed. If one teacher's filling out and the other teacher's, it's like the same behavior, well, that's kind of more over a course of the day. So let's kind of look at what we can do to help that child.
Like, my question's going to split. Oh, that's the one. So for that data, I know I had asked this question from policy committee, which the policy, I didn't really have any issues. But the one question I had on it was, it talked about analyzing the discipline data, and I asked who does that? Like, is it the principals? Is it PSAC?
We have two committees for PBI. Okay. Yeah, we have, like, I was on one committee and the principal clerk was on the other. We have two-tier, like a universal and a tier one PBIS committee, and we look at them at both. We call it the Swiss data or the big five for those five types of reports, and we go over them. Like, we meet once a month, and every month we would take a look at just to compare the numbers. All right, where were we last month? Are we seeing an increase in a certain area around school? There's always, like, seems to be a natural increase after lunch, you know, when there's transitions, but that's what we look at. We look at them monthly. And then we talked about looking at it as a PBIS committee, a district committee coming together to look at the spots.
And so, that's part of our growing in Tier 2 and Tier 3, is that at the universal level, you're looking building-wide. Where are our trends building-wide? It's not student-specific, but once you get to Tier 2 and Tier 3, then you are looking more student-specific and looking at a check and check-out, for example. That's a standard Tier 2 intervention. How is that working for the 25 students who are on check and check-out? And then if we're not seeing progress, then what are our next steps? And so looking universally, all students, and then targeting more of that student data, more individualized. And that we probably will be looking at that a little differently than we have in the past.
And
as you probably saw with the policy committee of how it's circulated.
Right. And then Academy will generate those reports quarterly, share it out in staff meeting, and then there's a follow-up lesson to identify, okay, we're seeing defiance is the behavior that's kind of appearing the most. Let's revisit our expectations with that, give some scenarios specific to the junior high or things that we're identifying from the behavior reports. How can we sort of help our students realize here are more appropriate ways to respond in that, in those types of situations?
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
And then the second part of the question was about bullying. Because obviously, you know, behavior reports is one way to identify it, but there could be bullying that's happening that is never reported. So is there other ways? Like, I was thinking, I thought of, like, the survey comments, which I know the board got the comments from, like, the 6th through the 8th graders from the survey, but to use those tools, or those might be good tools, I guess I'm saying, to look at to try to identify areas where maybe you're not hearing about it, but maybe still happening.
So the counselors have been trying to connect more with the health classes once a week, the idea of building that relationship with your counselor, because for some kids, they don't see the counselor as much as others do. So that was part of the focus of the counselors going into the health classes with that idea of, I want to start getting those kids that might be quiet and struggling that we don't know about, how can we start getting them connected more to teachers? I think that's an example of their follow-up with the anti-bullying, you know, the teams kind of taking, looking at this data, what are our kids telling us, making sure we have connected adults. I think that was the focus of the ELISA's mission. So we're trying to find these ways to put more of those pieces in place so we can make sure that even those kids that are really quiet that might be struggling, we got to get them to talk.
Mm-hmm. Plus we talk about kids at our RTI meetings as a team as well, and sometimes those issues come up when we're having our discussions about specific kids.
So the administrator and the counselors go to team meetings every other week with that idea and invite the social workers, the psychologists in, if it's maybe a student identified with special needs, if it's an ELL, you know, different types of situations.
There are screeners out there that you can universally screen. It's obviously the FDR captures your externalizers, those mm-hmm. who are demonstrating behavior,
right.
mm-hmm. and those internalizers that are often missed. And there are universal screeners that you can administer to all students, and that's something that we can certainly explore further.
Well, I know, like, we had the survey in the spring, and students took that, and maybe, you know, if you ever feel there's things that could change on the survey to incorporate data, that would be helpful. Mm-hmm. Just something to keep in mind.
Other board members? Colleen or Kelly, from a parent perspective, Colleen, and I know there are other parents on that committee. How did that work from your standpoint when you're able to take off that staff
right,
hat and put on that parent hat?
Yeah, it worked really well because I think as a parent, we, you know, even though I'm part of the district, mm-hmm. I see things differently as a parent. And so when we brought up suggestions, they were, you know, the team, they were really mm-hmm. receptive and tried to incorporate that into the policy. So they were, it was really great to mm-hmm. be a part of it. And it's also nice to know as a parent, you really do have a say mm-hmm. in what is being done at the school. So I was very appreciative to be part of the team.
Thank you. Kelly, from your perspective as that classroom teacher, being on this committee, this is your second?
This is my third year.
Third year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So having that classroom teacher perspective on some of these changes around discipline and PBIS. What's your perspective?
I really like the anti-bullying curriculum, especially in the sixth grade. Some of them, really, it was a lot of the bullies that were more sentimental towards it. And, I mean, maybe it was just this group of kids, but, like, they're just so kind-hearted and just, like, trying to include a lot more students who are a little more on the quieter end.
That's a great takeaway.
Typically, boys are the criers in the office.
They were the most
end of the
team. Same on the board. Yeah. Same thing happens on the board. Same thing happens on the board. We cry.
Anybody else?
Hey, speak for yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for the
really
amazing amount of time that you guys committed
you.
To this. The discussion item, this leads us beautifully into the board policy, first reading on student behavior policy and procedures, as they beautifully highlighted their change to the law, which has impacted our policies. And again, Dean highlighted it, Stephanie highlighted it, and they definitely highlighted it around changes around discipline in the procedures and the practices we use throughout the year. Those have significantly changed. But with that, I'll hand it to the board members. It was a good process because so many people had looked at this policy, and they gave us, so they handed their feedback back to policy. And we made a few minor little pieces, but it was more clarification issues with you.
It really was. It was mostly, I think, all my questions that I had were just clarification. But, you know, the policy, you know, taking the new law taken into account, and then really the team there actually kind of, I don't know if you call this the word I'm looking for, but added verbiage to it to just make it more clear, make sure students knew what was happening, what parents knew what was happening. So I appreciated the work that you guys did with that, but I didn't really have any concerns with it. It's long.
It is long.
Yeah,
and it's a number of different policies.
But, and I don't know for the rest of the board. I'm assuming that they got, like, do they get the marked up?
Yeah, they get the red line.
The red line.
Yep.
So it's pretty self-explanatory what the committee changed.
Most were legal. Most were legal pieces. Most were footnotes. Mm-hmm. And then you saw those significant changes with the suspensions. And those pieces. That was a big part of their work and that continuum. And as they said, and I appreciate what Jill said about this, and I think maybe Jeff alluded to it as well, that our buildings have already been embracing this. It's around each kid, and that's the emphasis on that continuum. Mm-hmm. You can't, every kid who has that situation is not the same, and really being very thoughtful about it. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate what you guys said, that's been a part of our practices now. There's not just you did this X and it falls in this matrix, so you have to be, you know, this is your consequence. Mm-hmm. So, board members?
I think, like you said, we see the rewritten parts, the renumbered parts, what's new in here, and it, you know, it's just a nice bookend to what you already talked about. What's the protocol for educating the teachers and staff on the changes? Because it's pretty lengthy.
I got Jill.
That's not our intention, but that's one of the things we're talking about. Because it's also part of the law. You did, like, professional development for your staff.
Right.
So when we form this district-level PBIS committee, I think that's one of the things we'll talk about at the end of the summer before the teachers come back. We'll have some kind of PD in place for it.
I know we have some time on the district-wide institute. And then we also have some building time. So kind of giving the overview on the district-wide institute. Here are the changes. Here are the testing, schools. Here's our new continuum. And then more building-based work. You know, what are you doing in the classroom? Talk about strategies that are working. How is this going to look like? Re-engagement plans. Those kinds of things.
Great. And then, as you said in the handbook, and just to clarify, the handbook is the district handbook. That's a universal handbook. You know, Hadley has something a little bit, you know, in addition to that. But just to clarify that for the public, that it's that handbook that everybody gets and that it will be in there. And just, again, to highlight that to parents, that they'll have a visual that they can see if there's some issue or acceleration, you know where it is, where it has the potential to lead. I think that's great.
Yeah, and just what I heard from the committee, parents
were instrumental in that continuum. They gave some great feedback around that continuum that really changed some of the wording and how it looks. To Colleen's point earlier, they were an important part of this committee.
Thank you. The only other thing that said all lab, which it's not really part of the policy, but in the policy we have the administrative procedure for, you know, reviewing data and training staff. And I think the one thing that I would say is, you know, we have the policy here, mm-hmm. but now what our job should be, or maybe what I need to say more, the committee is, you know, mm-hmm. is we're monitoring data and figuring out, like, what is the antecedents for these behaviors? Is there more support that we need to be offering staff mm-hmm. or students to make them successful and actually try to make the changes? Mm-hmm. I think that's, like, a key piece to the mm-hmm. follow-up.
Mm-hmm. It should be some of the PD.
We have the document in place, but we need to do the...
And I think that's
and
that.
How can we help
Yeah, no, I apologize.
It's an important piece that we can't forget about.
Absolutely, and I think that's that piece that we talked around those PBIS teams, where the teams are looking at that data and continuing to say, why? Why is this occurring? Just make it up a situation. Out at the bus stop at Hadley, on a consistent basis, this type of behavior, what's going on there? And we need to back that up, that we're not just continuing to do referrals or whatever it is, mm-hmm. but the why behind that reason. And that's why those committees are there, is to continue to look at that. Jill?
And that's why the student interview piece has always been a part of our culture, and having the student write their own perspective and really, because that interview piece is going to tell you why, how did you get here? You know, you just didn't decide to, you know, stand up and shut them up. Like, mm-hmm. you kind of figure out what are all those pieces that led up. Sometimes it is a school-based thing. Sometimes it's, you came... a really bad morning at home, and mm-hmm. that's impacting you. So there's typically, at least at Hadley always, whenever the administrator is interviewing the student, there's always some type of social work, counselors, psychologists, follow-up connection to it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So we would move this on to the June 27th for action by the full board with the policies. Okay. Comfortable with that, board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Nicely done. Thank you.
Yeah. Next up is the supplemental pay recommendation. This was at Finance Committee earlier this afternoon. This is an increase of roughly $1,400. I'd ask Lori to give us any little details.
The Supplemental Pay Committee met in May. Your business board representative on that. And as you know, that's the time when we take a look at activities and make sure that our charts are up to date, and then there's also the opportunity for proposals for new activities. We did receive a proposal for new activity at the Cooking and Sewing Club at Hadley. It would be combined together into one group five activity. There was a pilot this year where kids were involved in that and seemed to really enjoy it. We felt as a supplemental pay committee that filled a gap that we really didn't have in terms of opportunities for kids after school. So we were excited about that proposal. And then the other proposal was just a change in group number for the Builders Club. They have submitted their activities for the upcoming school year, and they are doing quite a bit more in terms of service. You know, at least one activity per month, and some of the things that I highlighted during Finance Committee included free babysitting during parent-teacher conferences, feeding my starving children, the Kiwanis pasta dinner, just to name a few. So they would like to be moved, and we supported that based on the analysis at the time in the meeting from a group four to group three. Mm-hmm. That person is at step two, so that's what the number or the dollar difference is there, in terms of $800. The total proposal is $1,400, and as we typically do in the fall, we will take a look at all the activities that have been offered and take a look and see if there are any that are ready to be something.
Board members, questions? Mm-hmm. Joe asked a good question in Finance Committee around the use of any other materials, equipment.
There will be these two clubs do not require the purchase of extra equipment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And this will come back on the 27th.
This will also come back on the 27th. Okay. Next up, the tentative 2016-2017 budget. Just setting context, one, so appreciate Cheryl and all of her work in 6 weeks. On the job, that she's done incredible work in 6 weeks, and I sincerely appreciate everything that she's done. But just going back in time, I think it was the first board meeting in May, where the finance committee, we came together. We gave different versions that Cheryl's worked with, the Oak Park 97 school budget. We gave the new Trier budget, and then we gave our last year's budget. So we really asked the finance committee to say, give us your feedback. Where do you want us to go with this? And first off, it was really clear. They didn't want the Oak Park budget. They were like, no, that thing is way too much. We really liked the new Trier budget. It gave us the information we needed. It was concise, liked the narrative aspect to it. It gave people an understanding of what each section was. You know, our previous budgets were really numbers. You had a lot of different numbers in there with not as much narrative around it. So that was our direction. We took that and created our tentative budget. Again, tentative, knowing that where we're at in our timeline, with Cheryl being here for 6 weeks, board gave us direction to say, we'll bring that full budget back to you in August with a approval in September. And by school code, that's when we have to have it done by, is that September. It's that first meeting in September for us that we'd have to have it done by. So with that, I'll hand it to Cheryl. I think I've given some context there. But I'll hand it over to you, Cheryl, for your presentation, and then after that, board members' questions.
I have sent out kind of the beginning of moving towards that budget document. By September, we'll have this fully developed into what we have looked at in financing, that kind of new career model. And we'll also get some feedback from you guys tonight on some things you'd like to see different yet, or more information that you need. And so then I'm going to assume that we have seen a lot of this and have already read that, and we're just going to touch on the highlights today. We begin our budget process with that five-year projection model. We start looking at that here this past year. We went through that in February 2016 with Becky. And then we actually began the budget collection process here in the district. And we continued that through April when Becky left. And then in May, I came and began looking through some of that information and updated some of that information, because some decisions about salaries were actually made after Becky had already left. So I updated the budget for those changes. And then I began to compile this new budget document that is completely new to the district based on our conversation. And then, as has just been summarized, then we are going through this process. We have to have it on display for 30 days. We'll have a budget hearing and take public comment in September, and then the board will make a final vote in September, and that's all according to the school code. This is a summary, actually, by the different funds here in the school district. And these are the different types of revenue that the school district receives. And so this is an interesting way to look at the revenue sources so that you can see that different funds receive different kinds of revenue sources. This is interesting to look at, but we have to remember that this revenue is restricted by fund. And just because we look at it in a macro perspective like this, we can't actually use different revenue from the different funds. And so when we say total budget, $53 million, that includes capital projects and everything. Mm-hmm. We typically talk more about operating funds. And when you looked at the five-year plan in February, we called that the aggregate view, but it's actually what we refer to as the operating funds. And we talk a lot about operating funds from that perspective, because that's the day-to-day operations that you can see consistent comparisons year over year. You'll see more volatility based on capital projects when you look at all of the funds together. One of the things that we want to accomplish as we move this budgeting document forward is that as you look at all of our reports, that five-year plan, your comprehensive annual finance reports from the audit, and then your budget, that you see similar formats and similar terminology, and that's where we'll get together. We'll work towards together. And then you'll actually see same numbers as you move from the report to get tie all these things together. So that's a shared goal that we have right now. So now this is the revenue comparison of all funds year over year, budget to budget. We haven't actually finished fiscal year 16, so we can't give you actuals yet, but we can talk about the budget change in dollar value and percent. And so you can see revenue year over year will be going up 1.47%.
most of our revenue is derived from property taxes, as you know, here in the state of Illinois. That's limited by the consumer price index, or 5%, whichever is lower. And then we also get the value of the property, and that's where most of our revenue actually comes from. And then state and federal sources. This is a pie chart of all of the revenue, and that's so that you can actually see that 87.62% of total revenue comes from property taxes. Corporate personal property taxes is 2.18%, and then our general state aid 2.75%, state categorical 3.69%, federal aid 1.74%. So we're actually very fortunate right now that we receive the majority of our revenue from local property taxes rather than state federal taxes. This is the revenue by sourcing individual funds, and I like to present it in this way so you can see the percent of revenue by in the different funds and then where those revenue come from. And so different funds have different dependency on different sources of revenue, but again, overall, all government funds, our property taxes are 87.6%. So now moving on to think about and look at the expenditure side of the equation, again, macro views here, all funds. This is by type. We'll also look at it by program area tonight, but this is by type, salary, benefits, purchase services. So you can see the majority of our spending is in salary and benefits. We're human resources rich here, and we're real estate rich. Those are the two things that we have. There's a lot of money in operations and maintenance and salary and benefits. So it's the teachers in the classroom here. And you can see that our spending is going up in those areas, salary and benefits, all contractual agreements, mostly teacher salaries here. And you can see that we have some expenditures actually going down in some of the administrative areas, purchase services, supply. You see the biggest changes in this capital outlay, and that's because our summer projects, they're less year over year. We're doing less this summer than we did last summer. And then this is the expenditure comparison by fund, so that you can see year over year the changes. And again, as you might expect in operations and maintenance, it's going down here. And using capital projects. Oh, sorry. An interesting phenomenon here is that we actually record custodial salaries and benefits in the education fund rather than the operations and maintenance fund, which is something I'd like to explore as we move forward, as we compare ourselves to other school districts. That would be an anomaly. I've noticed several others that would be nice to talk about maybe with that finance committee, but that's one thing that's interesting here. Another thing that has been interesting is that we recorded a lot of those construction projects and operation and maintenance and some of those architectural fees rather than in capital projects. And this is actually an improvement. In this budget cycle, we have moved those expenditures into capital projects, and that's also where those belong. And you'll see better alignment year over year and those kinds of costs also.
So I think that's going to be an important piece, board, for long term. When we're looking at that, we're going to have to remember that Cheryl is putting those funds in the most appropriate account.
Sure.
Yeah. So when we look at that, we're going to have to look at these previous years and just remember that piece going forward.
I think that's a good asterisk in the budget for next year.
I would agree. I just think it's going to be really important.
Yeah. There's work to do to move towards that, because then we have to realign revenue. So we have to march towards that.
Yeah.
Just a point on that, and I was going to go back to it when I asked you a question, so you kind of answered it already. But going back historically, can't you go back? I mean, if this isn't skyward, can't you go back and then reallocate those to the correct fund so that when we're looking at a year-to-year comparison, we actually get apples to apples?
I could do that for management purposes, but once we have issued financial statements and
understood.
So forth, we don't want to.
Yeah.
We can't go back and change that.
And I'm not
that
speaking,
I can tell you.
Right.
So, John, you're looking for pro forma stuff.
Yeah, I'm speaking
right.
For management purposes.
Right.
Otherwise, you will get these deltas that
you will.
Aren't necessarily associated with the more apples to oranges, apples to apples. So that's what I would look. I know it's time consuming, but if you are going to reallocate to the correct funds, as you stated, you want to do it going back at least from the 5 years, 4 years going back, or 5 years going back.
I think it'd be important for the board to give us direction on how many years back, because it will be a lot of time if we're looking at 3 years, and recognizing that we would show that at the next year budget timeline, mm-hmm. that it's not going to be something that's going to happen over this summer.
Maybe that's some feedback from Cheryl, too, on what you think might be appropriate.
Okay.
So here, side by side, trying to give a visual of revenues by fund compared to expenditures by fund. And, of course, you can see the majority of our expenditures and revenue very similar, like spending and revenue stream. And most of that is in the education fund and operation and maintenance and transportation capital projects will change over here. Now to focus on the operating funds, again, these are the funds that you looked at within your five-year plan, day-to-day operations. So this is education fund, operation and maintenance, transportation, working cash, and TORT. These are universally defined in this way. And so zeroing in on those funds, then you can save total revenues year over year and expenditures. An excess deficit before transfers, and then we make transfers out of these funds for capital projects and debt service to the other funds that are not included here. So mm-hmm. you can see that this past year we were expecting a surplus from the operating funds of $1.2 million, and we're budgeting for next year about $853,000. If you were to compare this to the five-year plan, this was expected to be a little bit higher, about $1.3 million. But in preparing this budget, one of the realignments that Becky made was rather than making a full transfer between funds to pay debt service, she is actually suggesting recognizing general state aid directly into the debt service fund, and then you don't have to make the transfer. So that's a little bit of an anomaly that looks slightly different than that five-year plan that you look at. And this is when I talked about the program area, except to zero in on specifically the education fund, because this is the program area that we're accustomed to talking about. And again, you can see most of our spending is in regular education, special education, instructional areas, and pupil support. And you can also see year over year, budget to budget, that expenses are going up in these areas, and that's really good news, I think. And then some reduction in the administrative areas. And a lot of those reductions are in technology and leases and through special education tuition. Those are basically the reductions. The increases are basically in salaries and benefits, which you also saw that tie when we looked at the type of expenditure. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the program areas again in a pie chart, just another visual to help us see where most of our spending is, which is over here in this area, all the way through pupil support, just kind of speech and guidance and those kinds of things where we provide support for students, psychologists, and other instructional or the other programs like language programs, gifted program, co-curriculars, things like that. This is the education fund only by type. And again, you can see when you look at going from the macro level coming down to the education fund, mostly salary and benefits, and all the salary benefits right now are here in the education fund. The vast majority of that is teachers' salaries. And again, you can see the reduction in the other program areas as we have worked on some cost containment, restructured some things, particularly in the technology area. This is a staffing comparison. You can see year over year that we're projecting about a 2.2 FTE reduction, and there's some conversations about that.
So these are all FTEs? All these numbers are?
Correct.
All FTEs. Full-time equivalents. Yeah. We count teachers as 1.0 for their year, but the 12-month staff then is 1.0 for their positions. So that's historically how school districts look at that.
Mm-hmm. Can we stay on that real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's page 8 and then again, page 12, we talked about this in the other report, the bigger report you gave us. It is just, there is, it reports it as 3.2 and change. It's actually, you just stated 2.2. I think that's page 12.
Okay.
So just a catch on that.
Sorry.
Page 12 at the top. believe that's what it is.
Yeah, it does say 3.2.
Memorized it correctly. But there, the bigger question here is there was a discussion about 7.4 actual overall increase in the teaching FTEs, but overall we have a 2.2 reduction. Did I get that right?
That's correct, but one of the things I have to apologize for is that I learned that maybe I grabbed the wrong data from last year.
Okay.
That update for you, degree teaching area, it's close, but it's not exactly perfect, and that's my bad for being new and not...
No, that's okay.
And again, sorry, why it's tentative? I mean, again, Cheryl being on the ground 6 weeks, seeing different.
Down, like, three times on my computer,
so that'll be a piece that we'll get back to fairly quickly on that staffing side of the things. But we want to scrub those.
When we do, go ahead and scrub them and then get the historic numbers. Get them so that we can analyze them correctly. When you do, if you don't mind, this is my question. If you could take and explain that increase in FT, where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think drill down as tightly as you can, all the way down to, what program it is for. I mean, here it's drilling down to the school, and I looked at this for a while, I couldn't get to the 7.2, so I apologize. That's why I was asking the question, but maybe now it makes sense why I couldn't.
So. Okay, so just to summarize that, so if it is the 7.4 at that time, just whatever the number is, that we come back and say, okay, this is where that 7.4 laid out. Three of them were teachers here, two were here this role here and this role there.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because I'm sure there's some ups and downs.
Yeah.
It is
that net.
So it may be a longer description than that, but if you added four here and you reduce one here, I think... That's
what you're looking for, is the
detail. It might get a little more cumbersome because there may be a lot more to do with this. It's bouncing around. It's not just all stable.
It's not.
Well, that's one thing I had asked for. If we could see, it's overkill in data, if we could actually see, because I think we did it last year on the budget, like a spreadsheet, not with staff name, but position. Like a specific breakdown, so we could see all these positions, like
from custodian,
custodian to whatever grade teacher to.
You're good. I know what you mean.
See all the positions by. I was thinking by building the position, the head counts is sort of all the head.
Was that a breakout that you did?
I mean, you guys obviously looking at
that. Yeah, that's what we use.
Yeah. So I would just say forward that information off to us so that we can see it.
But in what we have on the screen, it's pretty detailed except for one column, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one row, excuse me, certified. Isn't everything else pretty detailed? Like it has food services, building and grounds, technology.
We have instructional and supporting, clerical. Oh, no, not this one. I'm more, not on this one, sorry.
So you're more on the global salaries and benefits. That's what you were referring to.
Yeah.
Because that was your question.
Not staffing, yeah, sorry.
No, that's
okay. I jumped on that, sorry.
No, but it's still a valid point of what you're asking. They're tied in.
Yeah.
What page are you on, Stephanie? I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that we're...
Sorry.
No.
I jumped ahead.
She wanted more salaries.
13, more the salaries for that. Because we have, we show the totals.
Yeah, regular ed, special ed, other instructional, which
I
know is a question.
So it's all broken down.
It's on 13 in the budget.
The type, exactly what positions they were and the salaries, to be able to compare year to year. Mm-hmm. But really the detail behind this, less the person's name that's called.
Okay.
But more the position.
Do you want, just for clarification, you were asking, me, I'd ask a question right here. Can I give you, because I look at this chart, and the only thing that, the one she has on the screen there, the only thing that's missing is the salary, or the total expense item. Like, 41 and Ben Franklin for certified.
Is X dollars.
So you want to see a dollar amount next to it or something?
That's what I'm asking.
With that chart, Stephanie, here, even though, we have staffing here, FTE in a column, and then that Hadley column under building administrator, where it says 3, and then we would have a column next to it or underneath or however we organize
you
it.
And said
X,
X salary for those three administrators?
What I would do is just mirror the two.
Okay.
I would say, here it is in absolute numbers by FTEs.
And then here's the cash.
Below, that's in dollars. Now, I'm asking a question, though. If Stephanie wanted more detail than that, then, you know, that's how I would deliver it.
I wanted it more detailed from, and I kind of tagged off of you, but I'm on a different chart. I meant to ask the question on a different chart, so I apologize for making it more confusing. But I was thinking we're going to get to it in two slides.
Do you want to wait till then, and then you can?
I don't think we're going to get it in short.
No, we're not in short.
Yeah.
This is tied together stuff.
But how we break down the, like, regular education, special ed, other instructional support services, instructional staff, general administration, school administration. I wanted to know, like, in each of these buckets, what positions are we even talking about? How many of each position? The breakdown of salaries.
Okay.
For that. That's why I wanted that detail.
But not by site, but program area, but not necessarily in the location.
I would say by both.
Can I make a suggestion? Can I say, take this chart, just a suggestion, take this chart, do what I thought was a good idea of putting the FTEs like you have it,
and then the dollars.
And then the salaries or the benefits, the cost associated with those FTEs. And then, Stephanie, if I can ask a question now, which of those rows do you want to then see the backup data? I would guess it would be, based on what you said, I'm guessing you're certified, the third row, and the fourth row, instructional and support aids, and then have the detail behind that. Because those are your two biggest fillers of all that data.
Yeah.
The other one's two and a half and all that, so I don't know that that's as pertinent. And then that would be, then you would see what makes up all of certified. Now the question I would have is, within that certified, how is it broken up? It's a question for you. Is it broken up by
regular ed, special ed?
More detail.
But that's how regular ed, special ed, based on the detail that you presented, and go back with the charts, right? So.
Because we have the totals on page 13, but you're wanting, right, but she's wanting. I think what you're asking is to deconstruct that, especially in the two heavy areas, certified instructional and support aids. And so then, and is that to, and this is where some of your background, Cheryl, comes in too, is that to then have, a year-on-year look at how we're maybe shifting staff, where we need more of staff and why, or will we get that anyway on a year-to-year basis?
From the Skyward software, I can get one of the things she asked for is the dollar value of salary benefits versus services supplies by these program areas in a summary, like as regular education and then the type of expenditures.
Right.
Drilling down to the FTE by these program areas, that we'd have to look at employee management, I think, over several years to get FTE counts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we'd have to go to two different places and kind of put this together. If you want us to just zero in on teachers and these two categories,
right,
that would be a little easier. It's a bulk of the work, but still the majority of the IT.
Because the intention or the purpose, this goes to Stephanie, the intention in wanting to deconstruct it at that level is to do.
Well, I guess I was more just curious. I mean, if you look at the expenditures, by the staff position, it has the total, but we don't have a head, we don't have a head count there, which, you could look over here at...
On page 13,
page 13. Mm-hmm. You can look at our certified staff head count, but, it is breaking it down in more detail. We're breaking it down in these different categories, and I'm curious, so what is, what are the head counts? How many people are we talking about that make up these positions?
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly are the positions? Because... I know you answered one of my questions, Cheryl. I think I had asked what was regular ed, special ed, and then other instructional is co-curricular, bilingual, school gifted, private tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Support services is social worker, health, psychology, speech guidance. Instructional staff is professional development. K-9 media center assessment requesting.
So
I was more curious what...
To see those pieces underneath. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at.
What we have in what different areas, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know that it has to be in like a formal report presented in our formal budget. It was mm-hmm. just data that I was curious.
Yeah, as like an addendum.
Yeah, as an mm-hmm. addendum. I'm not saying you have mm-hmm. to make something fancy report mm-hmm. to publish it.
Well, they should have it.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like you can
it
pull it.
Mm-hmm. You had to put
it. Is it this?
Buckets, so.
I'm just wondering. This is last year.
Right, that's what I was
just trying to get an A. So
yeah.
The FTE count for each of our schools. By position, so I'm looking right now at Lincoln, and it says a digital literacy specialist and a gifted specialist, a 1.0. That's what you're looking for.
0.5, 0.8, whatever it is, yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
Keep in mind, when you look at the dollars, too, how many people do we have retiring this year?
18.
So we have, thank you, over here. By the way, it's good the way you threw your voice like that. That was awesome. Yeah, so there's 18 people retiring, and so as you do this from year to year, I've done this many years of budgeting and looking at these things, as you do this and you hire replacement teachers, you're going to see sometimes swings in these numbers that's going to require a lot of work if you're trying to make decisions at that level. So you may see a number from 1 year drop and think, wow, we just are not spending as much there. And then you'll notice that you have the same kind of FTEs, but there's been a personnel change.
Right.
So it's not, you can't just look at one thing and say, hey, because the number went down, we spent less, or because the number went up, we spent more, depending on what's going on with your staffing. Yeah. So
to that point, that we would just keep the FTE count there. Again,
you could have a fluctuation in
a person's salary based off of did somebody just retire and I replaced with a first second year teacher. But I hear what you're saying is the FTE count by building like we did last year. Does that work?
Yeah. That shows really well what you're doing as far as
Thank you. Thanks.
I wanted to be really clear. Yep. So sorry to. I thought it was better just to pull up an example.
Good.
Cheryl.
On the other funds, the O&M expenditures, they'll decrease by 4.86%, and revenue will increase by 46.98%. As we shift the levy from the education fund to the O&M fund, we're having a challenge there with not enough revenue. And if we choose to move the salary and benefits into the proper fund, we have to see a like kind of adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation expenditures, 14.55%. That's for regular and special education transportation. And again, we shifted levy to cover the transportation fund too. And we recently just rebid that transportation contract. And so it's a realignment of those expenditures and revenue. And then the bond and interest fund, as I had mentioned, we're going to recognize some state revenue directly into the bond and interest fund and then make that transfer on an annual basis.
We just have to vote on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in capital projects, these are the planned projects. We've already talked about some of this at the Finance Committee. We had a little bit of an update. And so these are the capital projects going on at Churchill, Forest Glen, and Franklin and Hadley, and then some district-wide improvements. And that's it for the overview of our new budget document.
So we've heard a couple little pieces that we will add. We just got done with that FTE chart by school, by those departments that we'll add in there. Cheryl is going to continue to scrub all of the numbers and make sure that those are all good to go when we present that final budget. What else are our board members looking for from this budget that would help have a deeper understanding of the budget, because that's what it is. It's a communication tool about those numbers.
Okay.
Anything?
I have just a couple of questions. One is on page 10 in the budget, it's the individual fund expenditure budgets, and this is where we talk about the ed fund revenues, et cetera. And I know that we've talked about this proposal for starting in 2016 and then payable in 2017 for a property tax freeze. So do we know where that is? Or
I
mean, none of that is moving forward.
Actually, the mix right now moving forward
right.
at all.
Was that part of our scenario base?
Correct.
We included that as a scenario,
it was,
right?
From the
okay.
PMA.
I just want to remember
we,
that.
We have all those pieces built into our scenario.
Good, yeah.
I brought a copy tonight.
Yeah, but we do.
Look at that again.
Yeah, no, that was good.
We have it in there.
I had made a note to myself from February to pull that forward because no decision's been made, but I know that that was part of our... our
so
forecast.
All the scenarios were yeah. in here, and we're close to that. That's why I mentioned where we're at in comparison to the five-year plan to kind of get an idea. So
right, right.
So this is a copy mm-hmm. for you guys to get.
Thank you. Yeah. So that was that. The other one is a question about the on page 22 in our budget on all governmental funds, and this has bearing on the board's administrative procedure, our kind of protocol around that 25% fund balance. And
can I ask a question on that before you go further? Isn't it the next chart that is more aligned to our policy, which is the operating funds?
Yes.
So is that?
Well, it start right. What I was going to say is the governmental funds on page 22 show a 29.48% fund balance, and then on 24, to Joe's point, it shows a 30.16. So that would trip again the finance committee and then board's discussion around that additional fund balance of 5%.
I have that highlighted because what the 25% for fiscal year 2017, based on this tentative budget, would be $11,376,000.
Right.
And the projection based on this budget is that we have $2,348,000 over
the 25%.
So what we need to do, which is your point.
That's why I'm bringing it up, because I ran those same numbers. Thank you, Joe. Joe's my budget maven.
We need to have discussion around.
Right.
And
but let me finish my observation here, because that's your exactly the number that I had, too. But what I want to point out, and this is my question to Cheryl from your experience, there's also another number here that gets, I think, lost in the discussion, and I want you to explain this. And that is, I think the board understands it, but just to have it for the public, a fund balance as of number of months of expenditures. So even with us at 30.16%, we're at 3.62 months of expenditures. Can you explain that, what that means?
Well, there is a similar kind of percentage and months and percentage of the time of the year, and so
right.
in reserves. And so we could actually operate this measurement is on June 30. We have to remember this is
right.
one day
at a time, right, yeah.
and how much money we have in the bank on that day. And so we actually are just beginning our school year the very next day, and we have a lot of expenditures for the summer months, and so we actually have basically 3.5 months of cash in reserves at that moment in time to kick off our school year. Here, we receive most of our money in property taxes. That happens twice a year, and so then we begin to receive more money in September. That then takes us all the way through the rest of the school year, and so this is kind of a measurement in time.
Mm-hmm.
So here
yeah.
we measure that at maybe like that'd be 20-25%. What I'd like to say is that it depends on where that money is at.
Right.
And as maybe we'll talk again some more, we have some of it in the education fund, some is in the O&M fund, transportation, working cash, and support. And those are very different funds, different purposes. Fund balances are in each one of those funds for different purposes. And so when you have a macro view of that, and you just say you want 25%, then the next conversation is, well, where is that money and what's the purpose for it being there?
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that we look at that in relationship to the operating funds, because if you begin to apply that overall and you have life safety projects or maybe large construction projects, mm-hmm. that anomaly will throw off your percentage.
Right.
So hopefully another topic for Finance Committee will be what are fund balances, what are the importance of fund balances, and why do we have.
Right, right, yeah. And I see that conversation. This is, and I don't want to jump to a large conversation, but just as a point that the Finance Advisory Committee, and I know you in your other positions you've worked with that advisory team, that's the kind of insight and input and education also that then's created for the public to, you know, to better understand it, but then also to give feedback. So I only brought that up because I think there's a misnomer sometimes, because District 41 has always operated with its current state. So June 1st dollars, right? We don't We use them for the year, the current year. Whereas some other districts will push those dollars forward, so it makes it look inflated for them. But we've always been good about using the money that's moved forward in our current budget, and which I think is really important to highlight. So it doesn't mean we only have 3 months, 3.62 months of funding available. That's what I want to make sure was clarified. Okay. And last question, and this is one that I ask kind of typically in general with the budget, is any red flags for you that you see in the budget, at least in its tentative basis coming into our June 27th meeting that we should be aware of?
Some of the things that I mentioned about alignment of where, some, where we have been historically recording some expenses and having a conversation about that. I think as we go forward, we have talked in my short time here about doing a little bit of comparison analysis with other school districts and things like that. What we want to align our expenditure habits to be similar to those, but then we can actually compare ourselves a little bit better. Other than that, it looks like with just a few weeks here that that Becky really dug in, tried to understand some things. She actually aligned some of the expenditures to be more reflective of historical spending rather than budget over budget kind of spending, and you see a little bit of anomaly there because of that, her work on aligning that.
Okay. Yeah.
Other board members?
Thank you.
Yeah, I know we had a lot of conversations about a lot of different things, admin pensions, cell phone costs, and all those kinds of things. So I think, and we were told really the conversation should be occurring during the budgeting process. So I think some of those kinds of things the board, and I'm not suggesting we have it tonight, but over the next few meetings as we look at this, that we should bring those conversations back up. And we should be looking at those kinds of things because, you know, if there's areas where we can save some money, we should be starting to look at that, you know, from a board level, you know, not just from staff saying, well, we save some money here, we save some money there. So that's the first thing I think everybody should maybe start thinking about that and offering some of those things forward in the future. The other question I had was, and I know Stephanie's brought this up before, but the FLESS program, when you go back and listen to the audio of the night that FLESS was actually introduced by Bob Cicerella, he makes a statement that, you know, the question's asked, how long can we sustain this program? He says 5 years. I think this next year will be in year four. So what kinds of things are staff doing to either keep the program, monitor the program, you know, some of those kinds of things. So if year five was year five, that that's what we had projection for, you know, what things are we doing on a priority standpoint to take a look at that program? So,
Can I ask a question on top of that, too, just for clarification? And I'll certainly go back and look at the minutes. And what did it mean? What did he mean by sustain? Like, what was the context of the conversation?
Well, the question was asked, how long can we continue this program? And the answer is essentially 5 years. And I think of what you said, from a budget standpoint, we can sustain this program over a 5 year period. I don't know whether that's true or not, or whether he made it up or what, but
I'll go back and look. Yeah, no, I'll go back and look as well.
Clarification.
It was Dean's first meeting.
Or at least that gives it some context where I can find it.
No, I wasn't.
No.
That question.
Okay.
I do remember what Kurt said though.
January 2013.
Was it before we were on the board? Because that was our first vote.
That was before you were on.
I think we re-asked that question the night of the board.
So
it sounds similar to the operating budget for our pre-K program, because that funding got pulled, you know, whatever it's now, like 6-7 years ago now, and the board, you know, committed to, you know, funding that. So it's a similar kind of thing.
I think the question, a similar question.
It was before you guys were seated, because it was a different board member that asked, and did say, how long can we sustain this program? And the answer was 5 years.
Can I add to that? I think the question asked on the night of the vote, because that was our first meeting, was trying to get clarification to that statement. So I think, Paul, maybe as a reference, that was May of the same year.
Okay. So we'll go back to both those meetings.
I remember the statement, and I was, you might ask the question about clarification, because I know that you were, like Kurt said, we were in the audience.
Well, rather than try to recollect it, as long as you're going back, I think you'd be better served to do that.
We'll email you.
So we'll take that on. We'll look at that January-ish, February-ish time frame. We'll also look at that May conversation as well. We'll bring those forward.
And I'd like to dovetail.
Go ahead.
Just one of Kurt's points. You asked red flags. Kurt brought up, hey, here, this is the time we need to have, bring forth our ideas, as Kurt suggested. And I'm going to kind of, this was my general question to you. You kind of answered it about the alignment. Would be an answer to this question, the things you saw that we need to kind of correct or do in a way that makes it, I shouldn't say correct, do it in a way that makes it
comparable
for us to compare to other people, and going forward just make it a little easier for us to understand this budget process. But my question is now, kind of an offshoot off of that is, in your experience, after looking at 6 weeks and looking at this data, and I, you don't have to answer this. This would be a challenge for
just ask the question.
The next 3 months. Because I don't want to make your CSR thing answering. What I'm looking for is you have this wealth of experience. So where can we find some savings based on where you saw savings within Oak Park? Or based where you saw savings in New Trier, you're coming to our district and seeing this over 6 weeks and saying, hey, you know what, I think you have these three areas. I think you have this one area. So I'm looking forward to hearing that as you further analyze, or if you further analyze this data.
That too.
But not looking for anything right here.
Unless you didn't know something, because let's enact it today.
I know that part of the interview process was around like a simulation activity on looking at the budget high level, so I'm sure now that you have an eye to it, that reality check is being made where, you know, to Dean's point, there could be some cost containment or, you know, areas to look at. I mean, not Dean. Joe.
I'm going to.
I was looking for
him. Other questions?
Come on, Joe.
I have a couple, and we're, like, sticking to high level.
High level.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing I could ask, and maybe, but I guess did get the page number on the question.
Try to help.
What number is it on the page?
Okay, so page 21, for example, we have all of the different funds and the revenues and the expenditures for expected for 2017 and then the total, and then we have the total budget for 2016. In my mind, I was thinking it would be helpful to just see a chart that shows. I don't need to see all the line items, but just the revenues and the expenditures by fund for 2016 and 2017, so we can compare them all in one. I know you did that. Like, I know when we look, if you look at the following pages, if you look at O&M, we do see that. We actually have it compared to 2013.
Yeah.
More detail, but I was just wondering. I guess in my mind, like, if you're trying to look at the whole big picture to compare this to, maybe that's not helpful to anyone else. That was just in my mind.
So you can see this chart really on one page is kind of a lot.
Right.
You couldn't really add any more than this and be on one page. The other challenge I want to remind you of is it's interesting to look at the budget government wide like this, but you really should make very many decisions based on that because of some of the anomalies that I talked about in the different funds and things like that. That's why I tried to present it just once, so if anyone asked you what the total budget was, you could say.
You had
it, yes. Yeah. Here before.
Yeah.
And certainly we could do a dollar change and a percent change, but if you try to cram anything else onto this page, that's just not going to work, which is why we then drill down into the individual funds, and then I like to give you multiple years that what is happening in individual funds, which is why we should make decisions during our conversations. It's about five funds. Maybe we haven't always talked about that word, but in the financial projections, as I bring them forward from now on, I want to bring them by funds, not any look, because it's really important that we know what's going on.
Right.
70, does that work? Does that her
if that makes sense to me. I hear what you're saying, but I think it makes sense what you're saying is that whole more holistic by fund view of it. Yeah.
Does that work for the board? Yep. Keeping it with the fund, the big picture,
yep.
And then drilling down by each of the funds.
Yeah.
Does that work?
To me.
Thank you. More data by fund.
And then we'll give you a historical view.
and then the plus delta. Other questions?
I just, you know, at some point we're probably, and again, it's during the budget. Again, this is the time I guess we need to talk about it, but we need to start to talk about full day kindergarten, where that fits in. Because you can't really do anything on Wednesday night, because I mean, start to make, you know, without some of these decisions, and, you know, can we afford it? Is it something the board wants to do? If it is, how do we afford it? So, you know, I think we have to have all these kinds of conversations going on now. I don't want to get into October and then we're trying to figure something out and then we need to talk about that next year in the budget cycle. Mm-hmm. So for me, I want to make sure we're talking about this stuff now, mm-hmm. and making sure that we're either touching base on it or making some decisions whether the board wants to do some of these things or not. So
mm-hmm. we move into a budget cycle where we roll out our current budget, we look at our five-year plan again, and then in the fall is when we should begin talking about those great big building blocks, because we want to put in those great big building blocks or talk about that those cost containment ideas in the fall. So then the school district actually has time to work on that before it's time to do the class sizes and determine how many teachers you need for next year and actually hire all the teachers, which happens in that March-April time frame. So it would be nice to enter a budget model where right in September
right from the beginning,
talking about these things, cost containment, all the things that you asked me about. And we talked about other things that we will look at in August.
And to that point, so this budget moving through, you know, getting it eventually approved in September, but really thinking about that full day kindergarten, those big pieces as we move into that following year, because with these you have staff that's in place, you know, for any riffing to occur, that's an April time frame. As you guys know, I'm not telling you guys anything you guys don't know, more for the community. Just that April time frame is that riffing that we have to hit by school code and hitting all those pieces. So when we start the new budgeting cycle, the moment we put this thing to bed, so we have all those big, I appreciate how Cheryl framed it, those big pillars in place for us, so we're making those decisions up front, and that way everything's starting to time up with that April time frame again. So we're light years ahead. We'll have Cheryl in place. We'll have a full-time CSBO from today going forward. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
But what I hear Kurt
does,
saying
is... I just don't want to, because last, when we started talking about some of the stuff last spring or whatever, then we're told we need to talk about it in the budget cycle, and now I'm being told, well, now we're going to have to talk about it in the fall, and I understand your point with that,
yeah.
But now we're another year down the road. I only have three more years, so I'm running out of time, but for me, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Erica kept saying, well, we talk about this stuff in the budget. Well, we're in the budget cycle. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we talking about this stuff? I mean, that's what's frustrating to me, is now we're going to kick the can down the road again and talk about it, and we're talking about now another year before some of these decisions get made. Oh. You know, so for me, I don't know when we talk about it. I mean, at some point I get so frustrated, I think I'm just going to go home and watch TV, because what's the point of me sitting here? I mean, we never want to have any of these kinds of discussions, because now it's, well, we can't do this because we had to meet a deadline for, you know, riffing in March or whatever, and I'm not advocating
that.
But, you know, so at some point we need to figure out, when do we talk about this stuff? When do we make some decisions about this stuff, and when do we move it forward? Because right now, to me, it's just a shell game. Like, well, we won't talk about it now because we'll talk about it then, and then it'll be in the fall, and in my world, I'll hear about, well, we'll talk about this during the budget cycle. Then we'll get to the budget cycle. I'll be told, we're going to talk about it in the fall. So it's frustrating to me. I have to be honest with you. So
it's not the first time I've heard a board member share that frustration, and I've tried to help a board of education and a school system actually align a system in which you can actually have these kinds of conversations and make a difference in a timely manner, because I think that's what happens in a cycle like this, is that when we get around to having a conversation, then you'll hear, well, we've already riffed and we've already signed contracts and things like that. And so I want you to know that I'm trying to help getting the alignment in the time frame. And if September is too late, then it's August, but we're not having a July meeting, right? So I am trying
And I'm okay with that. If we do that, and everybody sitting here knows that this conversation happened and that we're going to start to talk about this stuff.
You have our word that September timeline, once we put this one to bed, you have our word that we're going to start that budgeting cycle right away, because without it, and again, I really appreciate what Cheryl said, the board has to give us direction on those big pillars. Where are we going? What are we doing? How are we doing this work together with Cheryl and CSBO?
When we talked about this earlier, we're told to talk about it in the budget cycle. So when we're trying to talk, I know, Cheryl, I'm not picking on you.
No.
I know that.
But
then I get that we didn't have somebody here. So I'm not picking on you either.
That's
my frustration is, you know, that when we could have said, let's talk about this now it's, we have to talk about it later.
Two things. One, Kurt, it's more than just the full-day kindergarten money.
That
was an example. Yep. So I'm with you. Two, you stated it. We didn't really have somebody here to do it this year, so now we're kind of stuck to do it for fiscal 2018. That's where we are.
It is.
In September. But to that end, the good news is on Wednesday, there is discussion for full-day kindergarten, which includes operational costs of scenarios and things. So we are even having this before September.
Prior to August.
Yep. And this is a big initiative. So at least we're getting one of the big ones out there. And this is the start of a discussion.
Right.
We're not deciding.
If we get that done Wednesday night, wow. Be impressive.
But we'll still be
going to buy a lotto ticket then.
Yeah, I'm going to buy the lotto ticket.
7-Eleven.
But Kurt, I appreciate you bringing it up and just stating it, so we are all here saying the same thing.
Right.
That we're really looking for those bigger conversations for that next budget cycle. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And just for clarity for people, and this again for the public too, it's in our AP section 4 in the policy 410, which lays out the operational services requirement, which is what you stated. And Wednesday night, to your point, Kurt, had made a note to myself just to even bring the budget timeline with us on Wednesday night, because I think it's good in the context of that conversation to remind ourselves, but also the people that are going to be at that meeting, that it all starts even earlier now with this conversation around what do we do. In our budget, the budget that we have as a tentative budget, we can see that some of the capital improvements have been shifted. I mean, decisions have already been made to pull back, or you've talked about this before, Dave, to push out some of your needs, non-negotiables or needs to have or nice to haves. And so that conversation has already been going on. It isn't the whole conversation, but I don't want to get lost in the fact that we're being given a budget, as you showed us at the high level, that in fact is showing some reality on pulling back some of those costs and where we can save, right? So it's not all of it, but this timeline for me is always helpful because of that commitment. And you're right. I mean, Joe and Kurt, we haven't had that consistency in this role for a whole year. And so now we have that.
Yeah. Drew, I know you were going to ask the question much earlier.
And again, Joe, I like the things that I'm seeing. I know we're on a road to improve and upgrade where we're at. And I do like a lot of what I've seen. I'll reiterate that some of the things that I'd like to see is the comparison piece with like district. You know, how do we rate, how do we compare and contrast? The other thing, and I know we...
Let's just go one at a time. I just want to make sure that we're catching anything. That piece, that comparison piece from district to district, as Cheryl alluded to earlier, it will probably be in that next budgeting cycle because of some of the fund, her shifting some different funds, the alignment.
I just want to make sure...
Absolutely. I just don't want
to... I'm trying to plug it together and see why it doesn't work or what does work. So the following year, it's like, okay, now we've kind of plugged it all in. It didn't work this time, but we know why it didn't. So next time, it's sure.
I just wanted to be really clear. On this current budget, we won't have it, but on the next one, we'll start working towards that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Drew, to interrupt you.
The other piece, and again, we talked about the FTEs, you know, when we drill it down and split it all apart and slice it and dice it all the different ways, you know, and again, I see it with everything else, you know, the relative change thing, relative change in dollars, relative change in percentage, and relative change in numbers. I'm sure you'll do it. It's just, that's my opinion.
Would it be similar, Drew, to on page 32? So where she's looking at an Ed fund, where she does the delta, the plus delta increase, showing different fiscal years, and then shows that 16-17 plus delta. Would that?
I'm thinking.
No. Because one of the big pieces that Cheryl's really trying to get us to is you have that big broad, and then the broad perspective, and then you were going to break it down by each of the educational funds, and you'll see this broken down by each fund with exactly what you're saying.
Applying that same methodology into FTEs.
Okay, percent change.
Right.
And we're kind of back to dollar changes.
Right.
Percent
changes.
Right.
Okay.
And I'm sure you'll do it anyway, but I just want to make it take a clear cut. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. I appreciate that. Anything else, Drew?
No.
Stephanie, sure. I know you had a...
Okay, sorry.
No, no, no.
I'm like having a calculator on the phone. Okay, couple of questions, sorry.
Your calculator.
My calculator on my phone. Sorry, I was trying. If you're wondering what I was doing.
Pink. Wow.
So just to tag a little off of what Kurt said, a question for Cheryl is, you know, I feel like some of the issues that we have, and right now I know we're moving the budget to the fall, mm-hmm. and I understand the reason for that, so this is not questioning that, but even if we hadn't have done that, our budget cycle is typically in June. And I feel like we're making decisions in June for the fall, but you can't necessarily, I mean, we've already set staffing and everything for the fall, so you're not necessarily, are we really going to make any significant change
to this budget?
Or in general? I mean, even if we had done it in June, like when we did it last year, it was in June.
I think you're going to see such a significant difference in how we're having the conversation next year. There won't be any surprises when we bring that tentative budget. All those decisions and discussions will happen from September forward all along. So I'm just using the hypothetical kindergarten piece. Board makes decisions. They say yes to kindergarten. They say, this is all hypothetical, we're not going to do an operating or an ed referendum. So that, and we're looking at a delta for additional teachers at $1 million, the board is saying, staff, figure out how you're going to pay for this. So that's that piece, that's one of those big building blocks around staffing, is saying, okay, where do we go with this? What do we do with a $1 million additional piece? So that's the thing that I think you're going to see a significant difference. We won't bring to it for a first-time look in June. You will have it consistently going through and saying, we're going to make those changes for you.
Because I think that's what we need, like, before we levy, before
yes.
we figure out the staffing.
And that's the procedure that we've not yes. been, right.
Okay.
But that's clear. Yeah, that's a more
Actually, that's the process that was followed when the board initiated the discussion around portables and what to do. Uh-huh. It started well in advance. It started in the regular cycle because we had a different assistant superintendent at that point. But that was the discussion on finance committee. It was the beginning of that cycle. So that is what was replicated, that activity.
Which is how we take action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My other two questions are, and this is more just out of curiosity. Mm-hmm. Last year when we did the budget, we had it broken down by like building, and it was like an allocation per pupil by building. Mm-hmm. So we're like that, is, and we had like the principals managing the tasks.
So you still have a per pupil allocation,
okay.
But we were really following that new Trier model where we weren't giving you the breakdown by school
okay.
and what it is. But yes, are we still doing the per pupil allocation? It is, and right off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is, but it's exactly what it has been the previous 2 years for both Hadley and the elementaries. Hadley's different than the four elementaries.
Mm-hmm. Because one thing I was wondering with that is. you know, because that includes staffing, correct?
Per pupil, it's their small discretionary funds that they work with their departments and say, in this department, okay, we're going to give X amount of dollars to the science department, the art department.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with FTE. FTE
okay.
are handled here by the district based off of
okay.
what the board says are your classroom targets and saying, okay, class targets are X, we have to give out these teachers.
Okay. I think that's where I was confused last year because it was in their budget. I'm like, well, they can't control it.
Yeah.
One school could have senior teachers and one could have all new teachers and their budgets are going to be.
Absolutely. So this is all FTE driven, all FTE driven by student populations at a grade level. Does that?
Yeah, because I appreciate it. I didn't like it if
it was different. Yeah.
No.
I wasn't sure.
I don't think that's Cheryl's
good question.
Sorry, I'm trying to go quick.
Mm-mm.
This is more minor. I don't know if it matters, but like on page 14, we have the education fund expenditures by program. I know we call it like regular education, special education. And ELL and bilingual is in the other instructional.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I wondered is, should we ever be looking at that piece of the pie separate? Because that is something that, you know, we are obligated, like, you know, by law we have services we're required to offer. So should we ever pull that one out separate or not? I don't know. Maybe this is standard how it's done. But that was just my thought on that.
Okay.
And then on page, this is where I was trying to use my calculator. On page 30, so I noticed, if you look at the staffing broken down into the different expenditures by function now,
okay,
it adds up to $26 million, but I think our staffing is $29 million. Or if the numbers that we're missing, the instructional staff and the support services for pupils, do those two roll up? I'm trying to figure out why we have $26 million here. But
On the 17 budget?
Yeah, on the 17
okay.
budget, but if I look at staffing on page.
This isn't just staff.
Salary. If you look at salaries on like page 8, for example, our salaries are $29 million.
Is instruction different from staff? Talk
okay.
about that, yeah.
So do you want to explain that? I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So on page 30, this is not just salaries.
Okay.
Salaries, benefits, purchase services, everything.
Okay,
but
that makes
only
sense.
For the education fund. Where on the macro level, we're looking at all salaries, all funds.
Okay.
So capital and interest.
That makes sense.
Good explanation.
No, but I think, I mean, this when Kurt's talking about how we're truly going to have to start evaluating what we're doing and where we're spending money, and we have to look at, you know, as a district, what do we have to offer? What do we want to offer? What do we think is not, you know, we
mm-hmm.
will, at some point, maybe when we prioritize what we're doing. This I thought was helpful because it does break down our costs
mm-hmm.
in different instructional areas.
I would agree.
Right. It's that detail that you were asking for. On some of the charts, to make the chart readable, I collapsed some of those other instructional areas, and here it's exploded. And you can
mm-hmm.
see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
drill down to the education
level and that. Well, here's just, this is just a little asterisk too, but when we start and actually use the AP, under your leadership, Cheryl, with the budget, then it sounds like there's a couple of pieces to this discussion, and that is programs and their purpose and the intention behind it. And what I heard Stephanie just say, which is the priority behind it or the value that some board members would attach to it or not attach to it. But that's got to, we need heads up certainly to Paul's staff also with that discussion, because that's not only it's not just a budget discussion, it's an educational philosophy discussion. And then that also speaks to, you know, the board's role in that piece too. So just as a heads up, there's like that's a multi-layered and kind of an onion conversation as well. So heads up.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that was it.
Yeah. Other board members?
I'm trying to find this person.
We good?
Thank you, Cheryl.
Going once, going twice. Cheryl, thank you. I appreciate
thank
it. Board
you.
Members, thank you. Great questions and feedback for us. So as we continue working through this. Okay, you're on to a consent agenda.
Yes,
no.
Okay. All right. Are there any additional items that have already been removed from the consent agenda that board members would like to be considered separately. Okay. Hearing none, I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes finance, facilities, and operations, school district payment order May 18th, 2016 through June 8th, 2016, approval of lease contracts, and the prevailing wage. Other matters including approval of board meeting minutes from June 1st, 2016, special meeting minutes, June 1st, 2016, special closed session minutes, June 6, 2016, special meeting minutes, and June 6, 2016, special closed session minutes. You may have a motion.
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes. Okay, under superintendent recommendations, personnel report. May I have a motion to approve the administration's personnel recommendation as follows. Employment recommendations, resignation and retirement, internal transfers.
Motion.
Motion. Yep.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, discussion.
So board members, you notice you do have a blue yep. sheet on here. Emailed you late. We misidentified a location for Amy Spath. Originally, we had it at Ben Franklin. It was supposed to be at Lincoln. So you've got a blue copy there. For
that's
that.
The only correction, correct?
You got
yeah.
it.
All stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so for those the first grade teachers that we're adding, I know it's a position to fill a vacancy. But those are we're adding a section.
Per your board policy.
Per the board policy.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions or concerns on this personnel?
No, thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson? Yes. Item 2 is the approval of meeting minutes. May I have a motion to approve the May 23rd, 2016 regular and closed session meeting minutes? May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. I never get to do that.
Okay.
Any discussion? Joe, you had asked this to be pulled out of consent agenda.
Yeah, I wasn't here.
Because you weren't here, so you want it to be voted on separately.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that for everybody.
Thank you.
Any other concerns or anything?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Roll call.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alter? Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Staying.
Mr. Buffett?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, item 3, increase in rate of pay for substitute teachers. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to increase in substitute rate of pay effective July 1st, 2016 as follows. $105 per day for the first 20 days in district, $110 per day after 21 cumulative days to carry over to the next year, 15 or more days will carry to next school year for 1 year. $120 per day for District 41 retirees, $125 per day for long-term assignments of 30 to 90 days, and Step 1 teacher salary for assignments over 90 days. We have a motion.
Motion.
Second, Mr. Ellis. Okay, discussion.
These are pieces that have been in front of the board
yep.
a couple times from finance to full board.
Yeah.
The next two.
Yes.
Yep. Anything out of finance?
That was.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Lori presented comparative data. Made sense.
Okay.
And. Question.
Okay. Yeah, we discussed it last time, and also this is in certainly our agenda, but included in the board report that the community will see is the difference between the increases, just to clarify the report that Mrs. Campbell gave us to show us our rate of pay in terms of the rest of competing districts. I'll use competing because that's part of the issue here. And that we haven't had an increase in substitute teacher pay since August of 2006. And so I would just add that to clarify.
Okay.
Right. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Bustle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Our last item are board policy revisions, the student athlete concussion and head injury. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation of revisions to board policy 7305, student athlete concussions and head injuries as presented. May I have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
So this has been at policy committee at the previous board meeting, has been well vetted and thought through. Press has added some pieces, but also our the district's legal counsel has also weighed in on this as well. So it is a very well vetted document.
We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Roll call, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm sure with Paul speaking for Paul.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And thanks for the work on this. Roll call.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes. One last item, and I missed this, I'm sorry. We had the blue sheet, but also for the board, the blue sheet on our school district payment order. There was a,
right.
Paul's name was listed as our treasurer, and very rarely do I pick anything with that much minutia up, but I did. So I want to thank you for that and to get that clarified. So we'll sign this tonight, right?
It's okay. In your packet.
Great, okay.
From Secretary.
All right, great, thank you. All right, items for consideration for future agenda. Any items for board members for future agendas? We have, just as a reminder, June 27th meeting where the budget will come back, and then we'll take a vote to have it public on display 30 days at least. And then we will be off session for July, those two meetings, and come back August 1st is our next meeting.
I had two items, and mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to talk about them on future agendas or not, but they're things that I know I've asked about. And one is communication to the public. I know Erica, and I have emailed about this a little bit, but wondering kind of where we were at or what we're thinking about. More communication to the public as far as highlights on what kind of board business and what we're talking about at board meetings. I had sent some examples of summaries that the board from 200 sent out. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're still...
Yeah, they have kind of a board highlight thing.
Put anyone on the spot, but I guess it's something... I just don't want to lose sight of it because I do think...
Mm-hmm.
I know we have the District Digest, which is good, but I think... On some level, it would be good to, especially with a lot of the initiatives and things we're going to be discussing, to educate the public on a higher level as far as board business, not just
mm-hmm.
Good things happening in the district. So.
Well, and how that might be, I think part of our conversation was how that might be different board business, different than, or in addition to district business at that level of conversation. I know that Eric and I talked about that briefly also after that. As part of your community engagement
so
person board discussion.
Can we put it on
a
future
discussion
item?
Future discussion, yeah.
Just so Erica can prep forward and give you some recommendations.
Yeah.
Does that work? Everybody else good with that?
August 1st?
Well, maybe. We'll let her.
I was looking.
Anything else for...
Think about it.
What else? Two others. I've been saving. Like, I had these for a while, but
saving
we had long meetings, so I'm like,
next time.
For another time. But another one is I know we received some emails from community members about our grading system. And in particular, the feedback I've heard is concerns with Hadley and the students not actually getting grades or their numbers translated into grades and setting them up for West. And just wondering if we've kind of reviewed, we put the new grading system in place this past year, if we've kind of reviewed that, if there's any lessons learned, if we maybe are going to, maybe now that we have a 5-point scale, which does align with West, if we're considering, making changes with Hadley so we do align directly with West, because I think ours is like 95 and up, 85 to 95, whereas they're like 90 to 100. We're off from their... Our scale is off from their scale.
Every class they have 90.
some 92-100.
Where?
In West.
Yeah, and again, the key to that, because I, right, and I did follow up the conversation with that Jeff Flug, who's the associate assistant superintendent?
I think assistant.
For their teaching and learning. I forget his exact title, but, and that part of their grading shifted when they also decided not to do class rank anymore, which was last year, and that some of their classes for AP status are required for AP, what's the word I'm looking for, designation, to have to follow a certain grade score.
Spectrum, right. Yeah.
It's not apples and oranges, but like it's apples and two kinds of apples. So some would align and some wouldn't. So, and I think, I mean, I think it's
could
a conversation
we,
that Paul
can we put this on?
Why don't we put it on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm not asking to discuss it now.
Yeah. I think that's like,
I thought we reviewed it.
Absolutely.
That's why I brought it up. Not to answer my question.
I'm not answering anything.
I'm looking for
an
answer.
That may be out. So just kind of looking.
Okay.
Because this came up, whatever, 18 months ago, sometime in my tenure. We had a gentleman come from Wenbar West to speak about that transition and mm-hmm. was there an issue with Hadley students. But we had a different grading system then. So now we have a different one now. Mm-hmm. But I personally felt that that was very helpful because mm-hmm. as a parent in the district, the feedback I got was similar to what Stephanie said. Mm-hmm. But when you hear what somebody at West comes and says, yeah, it gives a little different lens.
And how about we do this, because I agree. Yeah. Let's not discuss it here.
Yeah.
Let's. Can we put it at that September? Because I'm thinking August is going to be a little crazy because we're going to be just back on it. So one of those two September meetings.
Right.
Did that work? Just so we don't get into too much more.
The only reason I bring it up
to have the right people.
We're having a discussion. That's great. But if you can tie that discussion with a visitor that can speak more intelligently.
I appreciate it.
That was my point. Bring that up. There's experts at there.
I think part of the issue, I don't want to lose sight of the issue. It's not that kids aren't performing well at West. I mean, I think we've had a lot of presentations that say, you know, we're sending our kids in and they're doing successful. Mm-hmm. I think the concern that I'm more hearing from both parents and students is we have a different set of expectations in the middle school, and it's setting them up when they go to high school. It's like, I know we don't want to talk about it now, but we're setting them up with different expectations that's making high school even that much more challenging. That the expectations are different. I mean,
okay.
Like, I don't know if
that. I'll put it on September.
Not that they're not performing well.
I don't think that was the discussion point that we had with that gentleman. It was more speaking to the issue you say at hand, and does that then have an issue for stress or whatever can be an offshoot of having two different grading systems?
Okay.
I think it's a good discussion to have. I think you want somebody from West here giving you some firsthand feedback.
Valid. Yeah.
Okay. So I got it. It'll be one of those two September meetings. Yeah.
Number three.
My last one. I'm wondering if we need to, and this may be coming to me for policy committee, but do we need to create a policy, or maybe we have one and I couldn't find it, for when a FOIA is required? Because I know I had asked about their individuals were looking to get the names of, I'll just give an example, we're looking to get the names of
the candidates.
Applicants mm-hmm. for the board vacancy, and we had said that a FOIA should be, they should submit a FOIA, and I actually asked why do we require a FOIA for that, and
Paul said that
when an individual requests information, we should ask for a FOIA, but I guess I want to make sure anytime anyone asks for anything, are we mm-hmm. telling them to FOIA, do we give up?
How about Paul gives us some feedback on that?
Yeah. Okay, and then we can also put it into a policy aspect. Okay. Anybody else?
I just had one. Mm-hmm. If we could discuss, I think it's called Connect 41. The last communication piece. I guess for me, I kind of like to have the board see it ahead of time because, you know, there were some things in there that I didn't think should have been in there, and maybe I could have articulated those ahead of time. Not that it would change anything, but at least I'd be able to articulate it. I think that we should have some discussion on what other board members think about that. You know, just getting a review before they go out. So.
And that's a district publication.
Correct.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Okay. Board member recognition under others.
Well.
Tell him.
We've got a gentleman leaving us. Tonight it will be his last night serving for District 41, and sincerely appreciate his years of service. We have a resolution in recognition of Dean Elliger. Whereas Mr. Dean Elliger has served Glen Allen School District 41 as a member of the Board of Education since 2013. Whereas he has provided a steadfast commitment to improving the education of children and to maintaining excellent learning facilities. Whereas he has led by example as a reflective and thoughtful member of this Board of Education and has put the needs of students first in his decision making. Whereas he has demonstrated his investment in this district by careful preparation, his leadership as board secretary, his service as a board liaison to the policy committee, and his participation in various activities sponsored by the Illinois Association of School Boards. Whereas he has participated in the development of a long-range plan guided by learner characteristics and has supported the implementation of new curricula. And whereas he has maintained a consistent focus on what is in the best interest of students through his unwavering advocacy for the school district, now, therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Board of Education recognize and thank Mr. Dean Elliger for his commitment and for his outstanding service to the students, staff, and community of Glen Allen School District 41. Thank you so much. Some parting gifts.
Parting gifts.
Parting gifts.
The good news about Dean is I know he's not going to give us any kind of a speech because he'd like
takes too long.
You know we're going to cut down on those pieces.
So there is a card.
Yeah.
There's a, maybe there's a lottery ticket inside.
I just want to make sure there's no glitter.
That's only me.
There we go. So let's see. I'm going to need to get the glasses. Thank you for dedication and community of D41. And it has this is like a thing
decision
that lets
making.
You know how you're going to make a decision. Sleep on it, definitely not. Take the risk, play it safe. I like these. These will come in very handy. It always ends up right back in the middle, though, which is kind of no decision, which is a little scary.
Oh, look at it. Yeah, it's not. It's magnetic.
Yeah.
Oh, see.
So what does it say?
Play it safe.
Play it safe.
So it doesn't end up in the middle.
No, it doesn't.
You can actually use this to make decisions.
Dean, also, one other gift. This is from board members. So thank you very much.
Open it. Whoever wrapped this, oh, this is great.
Show the camera.
I will. It's an ode to Glen Ellen, is really what it is. And it has all the different things here that Glen Ellen is known for. And I have to tell you, after living here for 20 years, it's going to be really nice to take this with us. So thank you very much.
Does it say really nice. Long school board meeting?
No, but I bet you
that's
can adjust that. And that's something I'm going to count on you guys. Make sure it doesn't happen.
The good news is from Utah you can watch the meetings live stream and you're like 2 hours ahead.
No, one hour. So I will still be asleep before the end of the meeting, I guarantee you.
It's beautiful.
Still be asleep. I can start them at 5 or 6.
I tell you, the Mountain Time Zone is like one of the greatest time zones.
Yeah, it is.
You get to watch Monday Night Football.
Football's earlier.
You can still get to bed at a regular time. Yeah, have a life. So, congratulations to your family. Making this big move. It's exciting. And I heard earlier today it's like July 10th.
It's like 4 weeks now. So, panic has set in at the Elder household. there's all these things we had to get done that we still need to get done. But I do have a couple of things, Kurt, that I probably want to do.
You can have the last word.
Okay, so...
You can
time me, but I'm not going to commit to a time.
It's not public participation.
No, it is public participation.
It's a point of personal privilege.
I still get more than three minutes, I guarantee you. So,
point of personal privilege.
If this goes to midnight, then...
Go ahead.
Midnight. You're going to cut me off at midnight. Yeah. It's only 9 o'clock. This board could go way longer than that. So, in all seriousness, I want to thank the community first, because the community is what allows someone to do this. And a lot of times people say, well, thank you for serving. You have to understand, and Willie, you're going to find this out, and you already know this because you've done this before, but it's an honor to serve on this committee with these folks and to work with these people. So, first thing I want to do is thank the community for allowing me to do this. Second is, and I don't think there are any left right now, but you're a teacher, not in this district, but you're a teacher. I want to thank the teachers because as a parent, you really appreciate what goes on in the classroom and the effect the teachers have. But then as a board member, you get this other heightened view of this. The teachers in this district are extraordinary. It's pointed out in the surveys that the teachers are phenomenal. And you couldn't turn out the product that we do when we talk, Peter Monahan comes here and talks about how well the Hadley kids do. That happens because of all those dedicated teachers. And to help those teachers is the administration that I've gotten to work with. So, and you guys are always here. You guys, we're like family at this point because of all the time you spend together on Monday nights. But, these administrators, the first time I had an experience working like this with administrators, but I would say it's... You're the same quality as any great corporation, Fortune 100 companies that I've dealt with. You know, you have the dedication and the perseverance and the expertise. So I'm very impressed with that. Thank you for that. I'm going to thank you because you came here right as we were all starting and spent an awful lot of time with us to bring us up to speed and train us and help us from making mistakes. And certainly the other board members for, helping each other out as we do this. And Drew, in the beginning I came to you a lot for different lot of things. Erica, a ton there. And we all started new, so it was all new to us. So it's been very good. And I know that I bounced lots of ideas off of Joe around buildings. And, we've had great discussions, Stephanie and policy and Kurt, and other issues that come up. And he gives me a lens to the history of this. So it's the board members and how they work together that makes a big difference. And if any of my family was here, I would thank my family. But they gave up on board meetings decades ago. Not really decades ago, but, because of the length of time. But you don't have a legacy in 3 years because, this is a Glenbard West is going to celebrate. They celebrate 99 years this year. So they're going to be 100 years next year. In this town, to have a legacy, you got to be like forever, And I've said this before, in a town that hasn't built a school in 50 years, you don't have a legacy in 3 years. It just isn't going to happen. You have to be here for a real long time. But I learned a lot, and I guess I would leave these comments for the people who come after me. One is, if you'll remember, and you'll probably go back to this too, and if Patrick was here, one of our first meetings was about the book ban. And when we had a look at that, there was a little bit of me that felt like the 1950s called and wanted their school district back. I was a little bit concerned that we had banned a book, and here we were just starting out. And I don't think that's what D41 is about. And one thing I would caution anybody who's a board member is there are many loud voices, and especially in this community, but in that case, we had loud national voices contacting us from both sides of this issue, ignore the loud voices. Get to the substance of the issue. Make up your mind and make your decision. Loud voices are not the important voices. They're just loud voices. Then the next thing that I guess I take the most pride in is removing the portables from the elementary schools. When I started on this board, we were told we couldn't get that done. That we weren't going to get that done in ours. And it was Paul who came here and in the beginning took a different look at it, convinced us differently. We had discussions just like this with the budget where we thought, can we really do this? Is there a way forward we can get through this? And we had lots of people telling us you could never get this done. I just happened to drive by Forest Glen. I don't usually come up on the back side here and saw those additions again. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty proud about that, and I'm proud for this district that they got that done. We now have four elementary schools that don't have portables. And just 3 years ago, you know, we had a ton of them. So that's good. Even when people tell you can't get something done, if you want to get it done, you can work with the people in this community to get it done. And the last thing is to involve the community. I think that this task force just showed us some stuff there. Again, you know, a lot of people come in and say, we're not going to do this. People don't want this. Go ask. Go ask. Find out what people want to do. Again, don't be drowned out by loud voices. Find out lots of voices. Make sure you get lots of different lenses on it. And I'm sure that we'll figure this problem out. And I will watch to see how you guys get through, you know, August and September and October. Because I think it's going to be real important to everybody. So, but especially to all the people, you know, like how many times you've had to rescue my computer and stuff here, just for coming to these meetings. And I really do appreciate all the staff. So, thank you very much.
You're not done yet.
No, don't be closing up the book yet.
You mean I don't get to go home now?
Not yet. Not quite.
Stay
not
right
quite.
Here.
So we've got an announcement for a new board member.
Yes, we do.
Willie DeFabio has been selected to replace Dean as Dean and his family move on to other opportunities. So with that, I'll hand it over to Erica.
We will, since Dean announced his vacancy at the end of this board meeting, which is, again, we'll be moving into closed session coming out of that, and so when that is finally over, Willie will officially take it at whatever the time is, 12:01 or 11:01 mm-hmm. or whatever that is. And then on June 27th, we will start that meeting 15 minutes early so that we can do the ceremony of swearing you in. Willie's already signed his letter of acceptance, which is also the oath of office, and so he's in place, but we will do the ceremony on the 27th, so we'll look forward to that. And that'll be a reminder to the public, too, that that's a few minutes early. I want, on behalf of the board, I know we all have said this already, but I want to thank the community members, 19, two of whom who are here tonight, for putting their hat in the ring, participating in the interviews and the process. And I want to mention that when I made calls on the day after, so that Tuesday morning, the 7th, there were two community members who were new, actually, to the process who asked me specifically to have their name moved forward to Cheryl to be involved in the Finance Advisory Committee. So I think that that's quite a good sign that, you know, brand new faces are seeing the value. And then even hearing tonight our PTAC conversation and all the opportunities in the buildings as current parents, there's so much that people can do. That I think is actually a great communication opportunity for the district and the board to remind people of doing that. So thank you, Mr. Cooper. Thank you, Mr. Curry, who are here tonight as well. As a part of this process, the board secretary role has to be elected by the board. And just as a reminder, I went back to our organizational school board meeting. We don't have a separate policy for when there is a vacancy. What we do is follow the protocol for that. So we will elect that position on the 27th once Willie is seated, so that we'll have a full complement of the board. And just as a reminder, there's an opportunity to present a written statement of interest for anybody who wants to serve in the secretary capacity, and that should go to the superintendent, so to Paul, and then he'll get that out in his update prior to that meeting. So the role of the secretary is listed in that policy 2210, and duties include signing all official district documents requiring that signature, recording all closed meeting minutes, perform other duties as required by law and or action of the board, and of course we have a recording secretary, which is Mrs. Moak, but the board secretary serves in that capacity to sign all appropriate information. So please send a letter of interest if you choose to write one up to Paul. Not required, but you may do that. And then we'll select that person on the 27th.
Does that person have to be really organized, Carol?
Well, actually, Mrs. Moak helps you be really organized.
No, you don't have to be really organized.
Help myself out of it.
You don't have to be really organized.
You're very organized.
But you better not have anything happen to Nancy, is all I'm
saying. Exactly. Yeah. She's the guide on that. She's the shaman. I'd like to ask Stephanie tonight, we haven't asked this formally, but if you would be willing to assume the role of chair for policy committee.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
And thank you for doing that. And I think that's it until the 27th. So again, just to reiterate, to thank everybody who participated and the board as well for the extra time that we put into it, which of course is our job, but duly noted, extra work. So thank you.
Welcome aboard, Willie.
Welcome aboard, Willie.
Bye,
No, we have in the past we can elect a secretary. But you don't have any meetings scheduled, do you?
We're going to have to. We do need somebody. So if somebody's.
Have we had one person serve in the past though, just as an interim? I'm trying to remember, Nancy. Because we did have an interim where there was just one person.
So if there's dying for policy.
In the past, it's been me.
And I can put it out to email. So
it's been the incoming person.
Which just replaces whatever the resigning
right.
is doing. Unless there's a lot of...
Right.
Willie just said he's died before. We're comfortable with Willie jumping in there.
I certainly am. Is there anybody jumping to jump onto policy?
Who's dying to be
on there. It's kind of an easy transition. Well, thank you, Willie.
We've moved on, brother.
Because we work so hard on policy, it's like anybody dying to be on policy.
I did it for 6 years.
Yeah.
It's a great
Board, are you
great
okay
position.
With Willie?
I love it.
Yeah, that's
a great position. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Congratulations,
thank you.
Willie.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well,
anything
then we'll get in touch with
Willie.
Each other. All right.
All right.
Upcoming meetings. As noted by Paul earlier, June 15th, this coming Wednesday, Board of Education special meeting, 7 p.m. at Hadley Junior High with regard to facilities. Hope that facility committee members can be there. I know they've been invited, as well as community members, so mark your calendar. Next Board of Education meeting to close out this year is June 27th, 2016, here at Central Services. And then the meeting following that when we return is August 1st, 2016, Board of Education, Central Services Office, 7 p.m. I want to remind board members, because we changed the date, I know that the list went out of our approved meeting date, so I know Nancy's going to get those out on our Google Calendar, but just a reminder to make those notes in your calendars moving forward. All right, may I have a motion to adjourn to closed session under Section 2C.1, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of a specific employee or legal counsel for the public body, and Section 2C10, the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yes. The board will not be taking action when it returns out of closed session. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in 2 weeks.